we'll see the bubble running into it.
Call the meeting of the Oceano Community Services District to order. It is Wednesday, July 11th, 6:30 p.m. Can I get a roll call, Carolyn?
President Guerrero?
Present.
Vice President Lucy?
Present.
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Hurdle?
Here.
Director White?
Present.
If we could have the item number three, the flag salute, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Moving on to agenda item number four, agenda review. Is there anybody that would like to pull any items off of the agenda or move any items around?
In the interest of time, President Guerrero, I'd like to move 10B up to...
Please be placed after item 11 rather than before the administrative items. Does anybody have any concerns about that?
No, that's fine.
Director White?
Yeah. Fine. Okay. The first two need to go ahead of time, though.
I think those two should go ahead of time since we have the officer and the chief here, our Commander Jim Taylor.
Correct.
Okay. So moving items 9, C, and D until after item 11. And what's the rest of the board's position regarding 10A and 10B switching positions?
Fine.
That's fine.
I don't think it makes much difference because the fire people, that won't be too long.
So it sounds like that would be the wish of the board to move item 10B in front of 10A. Are there any other changes to the agenda this evening that anybody would like to make? All right. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda as revised?
I move that we accept the changes.
I'll second.
All right. I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. The agenda is approved. Moving on to agenda item number 5, public comments. Manager Gieslin, are there any public comments this evening?
Yes. At this time, we have Jeff Pynack.
Mr. Pynack?
Good evening, board. Nice to see you again. Haven't been here in a while. Thanks always for the opportunity to make public comment. It's much appreciated. Surfrider Foundation, Oceana resident, as I said. I'm here tonight mainly to talk about the fine that came down. And, of course, we all saw the Tribune, which said that there is approximately a $1.4 million fine for the December 2010 sewage bill. And I primarily am here to indicate, as we did at the Aurora Grandy City Council meeting last night, that Surfrider, and of course me personally as an Oceana resident, feel that the fines that will be levied even after the September 6th John Wallace meeting with the Water Board, at which they'll try and negotiate again, and whether that fine is remains the same, gets bigger, or gets smaller, we still feel that the cities and the City of AG and the City of Grover Beach and OCSD should not be responsible for paying any of that fine whatsoever. And I'm basing that 100% on the fact that it is the responsibility of the plant manager to make sure that plant works properly and that the group that manages the plant, the Wallace Group, is the one that is responsible for that spill, not our cities. I'll call your attention again to the Friday, June 3rd, 2011 Tribune. Sewage spill was likely preventable. This was written by Cynthia Lambert. Because of a closed discharge valve, a pump was not able to push the raw sewage quickly enough through the plant. If it had, the probability of a sewage spill would have been very low. According to a report, the district, the SAND district, sent this week to the State Water Resources Control Board. State's Sanitation District Administrator John Wallace said Wednesday he believes the valve was inadvertently left closed after maintenance had taken place at the plant. Quote from John Wallace, "I'm not sure how that happened," he said. End quote. Well, if you got a storm coming down the track at you and you know it's going to rain, you have your plant staff check, double check, triple check, quadruple check every single issue and item that could contribute to some kind of a spill. That was not done. A valve that was inadvertently, quotes, left closed during maintenance that should have been opened that caused the spill. Well, that's just negligence, and that's just malfeasance and mismanagement, and the cities aren't responsible for that. So if that fine gets pushed over on us, there's going to be some problems. Is my 3 minutes up?
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very
much.
Next we have Kevin Rice.
Mr. Rice?
Good evening. I have a handout, if I may.
Thank you.
Kevin Rice, San Luis Obispo. As you know, I'm a big advocate of the Brown Act, and what I'm passing out is just some excerpts from a case called Baca versus Moreno Valley Unified School District. I encourage you to read the entire opinion. It's 22 pages, so I didn't want to supply the whole thing. But I highlighted a few things. Under the accountability as an employer to tell somebody they can't talk about closed session issues, I have a great problem with somebody being pulled away from the podium because you don't like what they have to say. I respect and understand those feelings, but you can't do it. And so I'm providing you with some excerpts here. I encourage you, Mr. President, and your legal counsel to pull up the full decision, and either any of you that are inclined to read the whole 22 pages. It's very enlightening. I'm a big proponent of the Brown Act. I hate to see people pulled away. Now, on the other hand, I encourage everyone to come up and be as respectful as possible and conduct themselves as respectfully as they can during the meeting and not create disruption. But I did not find personally that what occurred last time at the podium itself amounted to a disruption. That was not a disruption. That was their free speech. Whatever else is going on in the room during the rest of the meeting, if that was a problem, you should have called it to attention when it occurred. But you can't hold that against somebody at the podium itself. I just wanted to provide this to you as a friend of the board because I want to see the Brown Act upheld. And I know a couple of you attended Morro Bay, and you should have noticed that the mayor, Yates, he takes down names. And when everybody's done, he says, thank you, Kevin, for your comments on the Brown Act. Thank you, Joe, for your comments on this. And that's what you should do. If you don't like it, just say, thank you for your comment. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kevin. Is there any other public comment?
Brad Snook, please.
Mr. Snook?
Good evening, Council. My name is Brad Snook. I'm the chairman of Surf Rider San Luis Obispo. To follow up Jeff Pinak's comments, malfeasance and negligence have yet to be proven at the sanitation district. Our chapter has been asking for an investigation into potential malfeasance by the plant administrator and chief engineer Wallace Group of the plant for some time. As different news is rolled out of the district, such as information coming from the water board about the spill, the information shows that the wiring that actually led to the spill was supposed to be fixed in 2004, and there was a work order and it was budgeted for, but somehow that didn't get fixed. Is that negligence that it didn't get fixed? I don't know. We should find out. Perhaps instead, because of the Wallace Group's overwhelming power at the plant, they decided to prioritize jobs ahead of the wiring jobs, jobs that they could perhaps make money and revenue for the firm instead of a wiring job that they wouldn't get paid for. Perhaps that's what happened. We don't know until we investigate. You will find our opinion piece in Cal Coast News. We have 4 points for the district to use moving forward. We suggest that the district disclose the legal findings having to do with the whistleblower cases and also the Appleton case from the plant. We ask that the district undergo unscheduled independent effluent sampling and testing by an independent firm to help assure the plant is meeting its discharge requirements. That's number two. We ask that the board authorize a independent investigation into management's financial and operational actions. That's the malfeasance part, or potential malfeasance, I should say. And then we ask that the board authorize a supplemental environmental program whereby half of the money from the eventual fine can be used for the county's water testing program. And that will help assure everybody in the county that we're getting clean water at our beaches, and it will eliminate the conflict of interest parts that the water board looks for in authorizing these types of projects. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Brian.
Sir, can I ask that you have that submitted to the record?
Sure.
Thank you.
Is there any other public comment, Mr. Gieselin?
Yes, there is. Julie Tacker, followed by Carol Henson.
Ms. Tacker?
Good evening. I am Julie Tacker, and I was unable to stay for the remainder of your last meeting and was able to watch it on television. And I take issue with sort of the characterization of my cure and correct letter dated June 27th that I sent to your board regarding the actions that you took on June 13th, where you rescinded your staff's tenure. What the reason I approached it with a cure and correct was because I didn't and don't believe that you had enough information to make that decision that night. The resolution, all you had dealings with when I was a director on a CSD board, someone who was successful in representing one of our employees, so I knew he had experience. What I also included in that letter was contact information for the local employees union. I believe that your employees have the right to have all the information in front of them before you go into make a decision that affects them so deeply. So I just wanted to sort of set the record straight in that I wasn't inviting litigation. What I was doing was asking that you take a look at the whole picture and maybe perhaps even poll your staff to see if this is a path that they wanted to go down. It just seems to me that anytime you take something away, certainly in this economy, in this environment, everyone's job is precious to them, and it's their property, and they have the right to defend it.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Next one is Ms.
Carol Henson.
Carol?
Carol Henson, Oceano. I just came before the board today because I understand that the board is taking into consideration changing your agenda and the public comment part of your agenda and other things yet again. And I just wanted to remind the board, and I hope they take that into consideration while they have this under while they're trying to craft that. That freedom of speech is the cornerstone of this country, and that, and it's in a country that's a democracy, and that to try to impede, suppress the right, or to reduce the right of any citizen in a government meeting, right to public comment, however. However anyone feels about it, I think is taking away really one of the things that our country stands for and still enjoys. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Henson.
Thank you for coming and speaking under public comment. We appreciate that.
Is there any other public comment, Tom?
Not at this time.
Yes,
Mr.
thank
Edwards,
you, Mr. President.
Would you like to make a public comment?
Yes, I would like to. Thank you, sir. Mr. President, good evening, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. And I'd like to speak to the proposed Oceano CSD 2012-2013 preliminary budget. And it's my understanding, while it's not yet noticed, that there is a meeting set for Friday the 13th, that's this coming Friday, to consider passage of your budget or adoption. And I have a few questions now so that perhaps we might better be able to move along on Friday. And the first question is regarding some revenue sources that your general manager has highlighted. And this was done at the last Finance Committee meeting. And one of those is some OHV revenues. And I believe that there's some reference in the preliminary budget that $40,000 of the existing OHV revenues are going to be redispersed to this district. And as I understand it, those monies are to be associated with impacts from the OHV operations and activities. And I guess my first question is, what is the nexus between impacts to this district and the receipt of those revenues? Because I think that's going to be a prerequisite. So if perhaps your general manager could expand on that, that'd be great. Additionally, another source of revenue that was highlighted at the Finance Committee was some additional administration fees that are to come from the sanitation district. And there was a sizable jump, as I see it, up to $59,000 from about $5,000 or $6,000. So I could be mistaken about that, but it seems like you're putting in your budget money that maybe the SAND district's also counting on their revenue side. And maybe perhaps Mr. Wallace can expand on that later. So those are a couple questions on the revenue side. Also, I'm wondering, since this district 2 years ago passed a water rate increase, I'm wondering how that water rate increase and the revenues that have accrued from those increases, I guess it's a five-year program, how that's going to tie into your capital improvement program moving forward. And again, looking at the 2012-2013 budget, I don't see how the water rates and planned capital improvement plans are tied together or clear. So those are a few of my questions. I also want to conclude by wondering out loud, why is the special meeting being held? Special meetings, as you know, you incur additional costs. You have legal counsel, you have staff, etc. And it would appear to me that with proper planning, this special meeting, and frankly other special meetings that you...
Any public comment on the cash disbursement schedule?
I guess Julie Tacker.
Ms. Tacker?
Good evening again, Julie Tacker. And I've gone over the $36,000 that was posted on the website, I think last Friday, but tonight there's an addition of another $94,000, and I haven't had time to go through that $90-some thousand. What I noticed in the original document was that there's a $8,300-ish figure for R. Baker. And the I'm sure the work was necessary. I just didn't see the process. There's a requirement in your bylaws that expenditures over $5,000 go through an RFP process or a request for proposal. So you would see the bids and or the specs and bids and put that out to bid and get quotes from numerous contractors, qualified contractors. That, again, that amount exceeds what your bylaws allow. And I did notice, and maybe we'll talk about it later, but your bylaws are going to be amended maybe tonight to up that figure to $7,500. But it's, again, still over $8,000. You violate your bylaws. So I've seen this happen before, and I like to see the competitive bidding process. I like to see the community get the best bang for their buck. So, thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Is there any other public comment, Mr. Edwards?
I guess there is.
Thank you, Mr. President. Jeff Edwards. I would like to raise a concern about the difference of almost another $100,000 in disbursements that weren't part of your regular agenda packet, and it puts individuals that are following this at a bit of a disadvantage in having to come minutes before the meeting and try to digest several more pages of information. But I will start with the information that was posted, and it has largely to do with your legal fees. And I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but you're rapidly running up legal bills that are substantial. And, of course, Hall, Hyatt, and Connolly are the recipients of these fees. And these are largely in connection with your personnel matters, the Dan Silvera matter and the Langstaff matter. Both are running significantly high in terms of legal costs. And, you know, just some general questions. Are you covered? Who's picking up the tab? Are your district ratepayers going to be paying for this? Because it's a little unclear. Just in the month of June, I believe, there was over 13,000 billed from Hall, Hyatt, and Connolly in connection with the personnel matters. And I think when you look at what's projected in the coming months, this is not going to get cheaper per month. So I hope your budget that you're going to be discussing Friday has all these legal fees incorporated in it. Also, with regard to the latest disbursements, those that were just paid a few days ago or today, I see a payment, it looks like a prepayment, or at least an advance or a retainer, to a Jeffrey Reinick, who apparently was hired by Hall, Hyatt, and Connolly in connection with the Langstaff matter. So this investigator, private investigator from Sacramento, was paid $9,352.31 to start the investigation. That's a lot of money. Now, I understand that you have your insurance coverage has a $5,000 deductible, so theoretically you're into the insurance company now. Well, I'm not so sure that's the case, because it appears that when the Langstaff matter went down, your general manager wasn't under contract. So I'm not sure any actions that your general manager took in connection with the Langstaff matter are covered under your existing policies. So you might want to take a peek at that, because this, again, is likely to run into the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. And if you don't have insurance coverage, which I hope you do, if you don't, it's going to be a problem. And I think this is a pattern developing of increased legal bills, personnel matters, other litigation, and one has to ask themselves, what's going on here? Why? Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards.
Is there any more public comment? Okay, I'd like to point out that at 4 o'clock today, Ms. Tacker and Mr. Edwards came in and they reviewed a very long and lengthy public records request, which we graciously went through. And I immediately identified to them who the insurance company was, who we engaged, and what was covered by the insurance company, which we have all known since we've been of the Oceano Community Service District, to get them paid as soon as possible. And all our vendors are paid within 10 days, because prior to this, nobody wanted to do business with the Oceano Community Service District because they never got paid. So when the invoices come in, we have the ability and the wherewithal to process all this stuff and process it right away because, one, we want to improve our standing. Two, this all gets recorded in the database that tracks us for our efficiency. And when I want to go out, when this last audit comes in, and refinance some of our debt that everybody stands at the, certain people stand at the podium and complain about, I will have the wherewithal and the good credit rating to go and make that happen. So, yes, there's going to be changes. Do I wish I could be more proactive? But I spent 35 minutes of my day today answering public records requests, which I'm glad to do, but it also took me another hour or so to pull it back together. I get extremely irritated when somebody questions my ability to manage time when they come in and they take up time, and then when we're done, I don't know what the methodology is or what the agenda is. So anyways, I'm passing forward to you. Oh, and we closed out a billing cycle for the end of the year, of which the sanitation district was due $70,000, of which they are being paid tonight as well. So that took it from $30,000 to $100,000. So I'm passing this forward to you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This check that we received, I'll attach it to the minutes tonight, Carol Ann. It's a check in amount of $108,877 that was recovered. So, thank
you. That's money we would have lost had Tom not gone after it, found it to go after, because there was no indication that we had that coming.
Right. It was buried. It was buried in the existing management files. And I want to point out, you know, Mr. Wallace takes his hits just like I take my hits. But I have to tell you that his engineer that he has assigned to us, Doug Grosshart, we work very diligently along with Celia, along with Carol Ann, along with Marie, along with the boys in the office to pull that together. And there's more than that coming. So the question about capital improvement, that's the funds that we're doing the capital improvements with, which I've stated before. But until I get the money in hand, I'm not going to put it out there, because I don't want to go through what got the money and then came through with an audit, and now they possibly have to give the money back. Right. And Doug Grosshart and I went through that in spades so that we wouldn't have to go through and make sure that if they did question it, we had everything ready to go.
Thank you, sir. Is there any board comment or questions?
I have a couple. One is that we've been through five general managers, and for somebody to actually even be able to find that record on the FEMA application and what was agreed upon, was that was a miracle in itself. So I really do have to applaud you for that. Secondly is I'm really glad that we're starting to see the legal fees broke out, because, you know, we're not opposed to accessing public records and stuff for people, but when you have one or two individuals that have requested 25, 30, 35, 40 public request records, right, then you do have to spend some money in legal fees. And I see that we're now starting to break that out and show that, you know, just the one person who comes every day with, you know, seven or eight requests for public records is costing us legal dollars up to, I think it was 427 just for the one to respond to one. So I think that there's, you know, it's pretty telling, you know, what's happening. I don't have any problems. I'm glad to see that Sharon was able to help us with the AS400 and getting more financial data out of that horrific machine. So I was glad to see her on the list of warrants. Thank you very much.
Director White?
Nothing.
Director Hurdle?
Nothing.
Director Angela?
No.
I'll entertain a motion regarding the warrants then. These are the updated warrants in the amount of $130,804.21.
Second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Moving on to item number 8, board member comments. Why don't we just start at the end of the table and work our way down? I'll start with Director Angelo this time.
Mary and I went to the RAC meeting.
Well, we're not on committee.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're on director comments.
Oh, I'm sorry. None, then.
We're on feelings.
I got papers scattered all over the room. I have nothing.
Okay. Director Hurdle?
I would just like to thank the... Certainly. I would like to thank the members of the community as well as the county that I've heard from most recently regarding...
meeting, and I forgot the flyer for the Oceano Improvement.
Oh, that's tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night here?
Here at 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. So anybody that can make it tomorrow night here, 6 o'clock, the Oceano Revitalization Project. They were meeting yesterday at the Sheriff's Station. And I walked by it, but I wasn't able to attend. Were you able to attend?
Yes, I was. And there were Caltrans representatives there, and that made me feel very good, because the agencies that are attending are really, they understand our position as a rural community and having somewhat been overlooked. They also understand that we are very emotionally involved or invested in getting something to happen here. But the realism is that we won't get everything, but I do believe that the people that are working together and the more agencies that we can pull together, we will get something started here with this particular program, and that makes me very, very happy. You know, we just want to get something done, a starting position. So it was a very good meeting.
Thank you, Director Hurdle. I plan to be there tomorrow. My only comment is I was approached by a community member about doing a talent show. I advised her to contact the Oceano Advisory Committee in order to do that. They're looking at doing a talent show as a fundraiser for the Boys and Girls Club, which is, I think, a notable thing. And, Barbara, I gave them your name, so if they call, if they call looking for you. I think also as a board, I think we also have the and members of the community, I think good morals and ethics require us, if we say something which somebody tells us isn't true, we should correct it. And so last meeting, there was a comment made that maybe Karen Belee was paying her opinion writer 60-40. Karen Belee approached me the day following and told me that that was not true. So I advised that I would put that out into the public, because I think we should try to make true statements. Finally, let's go on to item number 9. Reports. 9A, report of Sheriff South Station, Commander Jim Taylor.
Good evening, President Guerrero and board members.
Good evening.
First announcement I wanted to make is something which I'm sure you're all aware of, but I wanted to speak about it this evening. The sheriff's detectives arrested a young man named Armando Yepez of Santa Maria for the murder of Gabriel Salgado, which had occurred in Oceano last November. Sheriff's detectives had identified Yepez as a suspect within 24 hours of this murder, and they kept him under surveillance while they collected evidence that was needed to prove this case. The culmination of this investigation represents over thousands of man-hours spent on just this one case in order to bring this case to a conclusion and take the murderer off of the street. It is my hope, and it's the hope of the men and women of the sheriff's office, that this arrest, though will never compensate the Salgados for their loss, it might help bring some closure to their family. And Mr. Yepez is currently awaiting trial, and we are working diligently with the district attorney's office to bring about a successful prosecution. Secondly, we, working in conjunction with the county health agency, have completed our quarterly tobacco compliance checks throughout the county. You may have seen in the newspaper today the results of the compliance checks. Deputies conducted checks of 52 of the 59 stores that sell tobacco products in the county. Of the 52 stores that were monitored with the decoy, 11 engaged in the sale of tobacco to a minor. 41 stores followed the best practices and did not engage in the sales. So it's actually a very successful program, because the vast majority of our retailers are following the law, and their personnel are trained, and they're doing what they need to do to keep tobacco out of the hands of minors. The stores that did sell are going to be asked to work with the tobacco control program to help educate their staff, and hopefully by educating their staff and working with tobacco control, they can mitigate some of the fines and prevent this from happening again. One of the things that I wanted to also point out was that 4 of the businesses were cited for not having business licenses or tobacco retailer licenses. So they're in business, they didn't even have the basic document you needed to do business. And I'm happy to say that none of the unlawful sales of tobacco products or business license violations occurred with any of the residents or any of the businesses in the community of Oceano. So these were all outside of our community. The retailers who passed the compliance check are going to receive a letter in the coming weeks from the health agency thanking them for complying with the law. I attended a meeting at the sheriff's office this afternoon, and with the help of the Board of Supervisors, we are hiring 4 additional deputies, we hope, this month, and there'll be 4 more deputies hired later this summer. That's in addition to the bodies that will be paid for by the solar plant, which I believe is 3 deputies. So we're getting back to the staffing levels that we were at before the financial crisis occurred and we had to start reducing our numbers through attrition. this is nothing but good news for everyone, including Oceano. I worked at Oceano Station on and off since 1986, and we have more deputies over at that station today than we've ever had. So that's good for this community that we're up to maximum staffing. And I'll entertain any questions.
I just want to say thanks for everything that you do. We've had the opportunity to meet. I've talked to probably every single one of your deputies down here, and they've always been courteous and helpful and available.
So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Tacker has a question.
I wanted to thank you for calling me at home and answering me some questions, answering some of my questions regarding the hacking incident. And because you haven't been here for a few months, or certainly many weeks, I wondered if you could reiterate our conversation to the board. I don't know if they know the status of that case. And then, sorry if I'm rattling your memory bank, huh? What the other question I had, and I read it in the, I think it was the Santa Maria paper, that some, that Mr. Geeslin had seized some computers from the district due to the personnel matters. But as rumors go, I heard that it was the sheriff's department, and I just would like some clarification if that was your department that seized those computers or if it was your investigation.
No, it's our investigation. We seized the computers.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, we. I had spoken to Ms. Tacker about the, there was an investigation conducted by the sheriff's office regarding possible hacking into district computers and the moving or possible removal of some files. We took custody of some computers from the district and took them to our forensic specialist at the sheriff's office, who downloaded information, basically computer logs. That information was then analyzed by a secondary source, an outside forensics company. And unfortunately, there was no information that could be gleaned from these logs that would provide us with an IP address for the person who we believe might have entered. And I say might have entered and moved files around. At this point, the investigation is inactive pending any additional information. There's no further leads to pursue. But we did take custody of computers temporarily for that purpose. But the other matter that Ms. Tacker's addressing, Sheriff's Office has not taken custody of any district computers in the matter discussed.
Thank you, Commander Taylor. Thank you. Move on to item number 9B, report of Five Cities Fire Authority, Chief Arenas. Oh, Chief Heath is coming up. Okay. Good evening, Chief.
Good evening, honorable directors and President Guerrero. Ricky Heath, Five Cities Fire Authority. Believe it or not, this last month was fairly slow for fire calls. Here at Station 61, we ran 59 incidents, two small fires that were outside rubbish type fires, 41 medical aids, two hazardous incidents, two service calls for odor, and 11 good intention calls which were canceled en route, and then one false alarm. 4th of July was a little interesting. You know, every time I patrolled into the Oceano neighborhoods, it's as if the neighbors all have lookouts, and as soon as they see my vehicle come in there, I hear the noise of whoop whoop, and then everybody scatters and hides. So nothing happened, nothing bad happened, so that was good.
Has the Five Cities Fire Authority been busier during the 4th of July now that the other communities are selling fireworks also? Is that causing an uptick in business?
This year, seems like most of the incidents for 4th of July related was in Grover Beach. And fortunately for us, you know, Grover Beach PD, they're right there, and they have their fire extinguishers, and most of these are really small fires. And so they put them out, and by the time we get there, they're trying to wave us goodbye, but of course we have to take a report. So.
Oh, and Oceano, we're more experienced with our fireworks, so we don't start.
Better aim.
That's right. Anybody have any other questions for Chief?
Has there ever been a fire in Oceano on the 4th of July?
We've had small fires, you know, little grass fires in the backyard and things of that nature, where the engine company just gets there and puts it out before it gets out of hand.
Right. And what time would you usually say things? I mean, I live in the neighborhood, so I know what time things.
Amount of 1,182,000. $693. And SAFER stands for Staffing Adequate Fire Emergency Response. And with that money, what we're going to do is we're going to hire 3 engineers for here at the Oceano Station and 3 additional firefighters at the Oro Grande Station. That will help us basically have 3 people on duty here every day, 4 people at the Oro Grande Station every day because of the truck, and then we'll have 3 people in Grover Beach. And what that allows us to do is, as Five Cities Fire Authority, we've been trying to benchmark ourselves to the national standard of arriving to a single-family residential structure fire with 15 firefighters within the first 9 minutes.
Wow.
And because of our current staffing, you know, that's almost impossible. We do rely on automatic aid, and currently we have 11 people that would arrive within the first 9 minutes from Five Cities Fire Authority, and then we would use additional engines from CAL FIRE, Pismo Beach. But with this SAFER grant, we'll be able to staff up with 11 people on duty every day, count the chief officer for response, and we'll rely on 4 people from automatic aid to try to meet that 15 firefighters within the first 9 minutes. The problem with automatic aid, though, is, you know, you're relying on another agency, and they could already be committed to an incident, and so it's not always bulletproof. But for the most part, we've been very fortunate.
So congratulations.
How long does the SAFER grant go for?
The SAFER grant will be for 2 years, okay. And the individuals that we hire on this through this grant will be hired on by contract for 2 years. And if we find a way to sustain the staffing levels, then excellent. But if not, then we'll have to let them go.
Well, we're really pleased for that. And Oceano is committed to try to make sure that you meet the federal standards. So thank you very much.
Thank
and
you.
We're happy that we're getting the third guy. Yes, thank you very much.
Those are really hard grants to get, so I really applaud you on that. That's really pretty good. Congratulations.
We have a couple of individuals on, you know, Captain Bova and Engineer Serby and David Matthew. They did all the grant work, and they do excellent work.
Great. Great.
Well, thank the 3 of them for us.
Yeah, congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Heath. We moved the report of operations and board of directors down to after 11, so we'll move on to item 10B, the sanitation district presentation. Mr. Wallace, good evening.
Maybe I could get some assistance from the video folks here.
No.
And perhaps we could have a little bit of light. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. John Wallace, District Administrator for the Sanitation District. President Guerrero had asked that I come and give you a little bit of an update on some of the goings-on at the Sanitation District and where we stand on things. So I have a couple of slides for you. Some of these will be repetitive because some of you folks have seen them before, but I'd like to go through a little bit of a background on the district itself and the plant. And then we can talk a little bit about the spill and the progress of the status of that we're into. So some of the pictures here you see on the wall are different facilities within the district with an overall aerial view there on the bottom. We have a 3-member body, as you folks know, the member agencies are the City of Grover Beach. Bill Nichols is the current chairman. Your president, Matt Guerrero, is the vice president, assuming the vice chairman at this time, and Tony Farrar, the mayor of Arroyo Grande, is the 3rd director. These folks are either by legislative action, the governing, the presiding officer of your member agencies, or it's appointed by resolution from your member agencies. This is the district boundaries, as you can see. We involve the 3 agencies, Grover, Roy Grande, and Oceano. And the lines that you see on the drawing there, the aerial, are the collection system that we have, meaning the district. We have 3 trunk sewers. It totals about 9 miles long. And one goes into Roy Grande, one into Oceano, and one into Grover Beach. The services that we provide include several things. Wastewater treatment, wastewater collection, as I mentioned. We have those trunk sewers where the local sewers dump into those trunk sewers, and eventually the wastewater winds up at the plant. We also have an industrial pretreatment program to guard against those kinds of deleterious materials that might be dumped. Outfall line mixes with the fresh water and then out the ocean. It's not very much water, but it does provide a service to those folks so that they don't have to haul it down toward the LA area. And in the future, some of you were at our recycling water forum that we had in June, a very comprehensive presentation on especially ag reuse of our water. And so we're looking to do that in the future. Just to give you a little bit of an overview of the plant and the facilities that are within the plant, again, I can't quite see the red dot there, but this is the headworks here where all the wastewater comes into the plant. This is the control area here. And then the water goes into these two primary clarifiers here, then through what we call the biological process or the fixed film reactor, and then finally into the final clarifier, and then into the chlorine contact chamber, which disinfects the water. And also, before it goes out to the ocean, we take the chlorine out of the water so that the water is neutral when it goes to the ocean. The rectangular beds to the bottom are our sludge drying beds, and off to the right, which you can't see, is our new centrifuge drying building. And that's a new piece of equipment that has been purchased over the past couple of years, and the building's completed. It's about a $2 million project, and it provides a lot of additional capacity for drying the biosolids when in the wintertime we can't use the drying beds. A little bit of a history of the district. It was formed by the County Board of Supervisors in September of 1963, and then was, of course, constructed later on. There was a great need for a wastewater treatment plant in the area at the time. Roy Grandy had what they call a sewer farm down in the city of Grover Beach. Oceana was septic, and Grover, at the time that the district was formed, became a contract agency. So there were three member agencies to begin with: the county, Oceano, and Roy Grandy. And then later on, Grover annexed into the district in 1997. In the time since the plant has been in operation, the rates have been a priority to keep at a reasonable rate. And we've been able to do that over the years, as you can see. This is actually last year's data, but it shows that your rates, as well as the city of Grover and Oceano and Roy Grandy, are down in the $22 to $24 range. That's including your local additional rates on top of ours. Ours is about $14 of that, and yours is the rest. But you can see it's very, very competitive with the other entities in the area there. Just going into the spill event of December 19, 2010, I want to talk a little bit about the summary of the spill and what's been done to prevent spills in the future. The spill occurred during a declared disaster, and most folks know that, but there was a disaster declared by both the state as well as the county. And we believe the plant personnel performed very, very well during that storm with the circumstances that we had going on. We have not received any notice of any health or environmental effects of it. And one of the main things that is notable here, this is the first spill that the district has had in 25 years. I don't know of any other local agency that can match that record, or for that matter, probably statewide. But it was the first spill that we had in 25 years. We, as you know, have been under negotiations with the Water Board for a long time. And I can tell you that the fine that they have come out with and the volume calculations that they came out with, we believe are grossly overstated and lack basis. And we'll be talking about that, of course, as we go through the hearing in September with the Water Board. This is a little bit of a view of the entrance to the plant on the right-hand side. Again, a lot of you are familiar with that. This is the dry version of Aloha there. and this was what was happening on December 19th. And you can see that we had about 2.5 feet of water coming into the plant. I had never seen that before in my years of the district. And so the rainfall was about 6 inches of rain in about a day or so, and it was very, very wet at that location. Just to give you a little bit of a viewpoint, you've probably seen this, but this is some of the local news footage off of Channel 6. Again, the top photographs show the wet version. The bottom photograph shows the dry version of the same scene in the photographs. In the summary of what happened, the rainfall and the flooding was an extraordinary event. It was not a usual event. As you know, there was a lot of discussion in the county about Arroyo Grande Creek, talking to whoever was home, gathering information to corroborate what we believed happened at at different manholes. And we also went in the dry later on to look at the condition of the manholes to make sure that those estimates were correct. And then we performed hydraulic calculations to verify with the field observations. So we believe that our calculations are very accurate. As I said, it was the first time that we'd spilled in 25 years. So we don't believe there's any long-lasting effects of the spill. On the beach was closed, not initially because of the spill. It was later on, but not because of the spill to begin with. It was closed because of high surf. And there was nobody that was, I don't know if that's not the correct statement, there were very few people who were allowed on the beach as a result of that high surf warning and by restrictions by the state parks. Therefore, we could not get down to the beach to do direct observations. We don't believe that there were biological impacts, and we have also contacted the State Department of Parks and Rec about that, and basically the letter concluded there was no deleterious effects to the Arroyo Grande Creek. We have had extensive community outreach. We've gone to all of our member agencies. We've conducted community meetings, and we've talked to folks who have come to the plant or wanted to find out more about it. I do want to say and repeat again that we're happy to give tours of the plant. If you give me a call, or Mr. Kieslin, give him a call, we can make those arrangements to go down to see the plant and make people more familiar with it. What's been done to reduce the chance for a future spill? I think Director Lucy talked about this last time. Manholes sometimes, if there is a backwater in the trunk sewer or whatever, some manholes could be lifted. So those manholes that are in that position are being locked so that they won't be forced open. We've updated our emergency response plan and our operation and maintenance manual. We've signed various agreements that allow us to cooperate with other agencies to provide equipment in terms of an emergency. We've replaced a number of pumps and valves that some were damaged during the flood. Others we've continued to replace on a replacement program. The electrical system's been upgraded. All the wiring in the plant, all the large wiring in the plant has been replaced. Our long-range plan is being implemented, which will provide for further capacity of the plant in terms of redundancy. And again, community outreach. But we've also gone through all of our SOPs, our standard operating procedures, and emergency operating procedures, and updated those. And we have fixed what we believe that was the original cause of the spill on the electrical system. By the way, it wasn't the wiring. It wasn't the wiring itself, because the wiring was waterproof, but it was a junction box that did have some contacts that were shorted out by the water coming down a conduit. What's currently being done? We're finalizing the electrical system upgrades. The only thing that are left are basically the street lights that are up at the plant. We're inspecting those annually. We've generated a lot of new, what we call work orders, to make sure that we have best preparation that we can have for those kinds of emergencies. We're monitoring the inflow and the infiltration coming into the plant from a rainstorm, so we know what to expect depending upon the amount of rain that we have. The county has been working with us, too, on the emergency plans for it, and we've also been working with the county on addressing the lagoon flooding situation. Again, this is just an overview of the plant with the facilities there, and this is the aerial without the nomenclature on, so you can see the facilities a little bit better. And in the future, what we would like to do is to complete the overall long-range plan for the secondary clarifier, the aeration and air tanks and blower building there, as well as hopefully in the future it go into a recycling project. Now this shows desal on there. We don't think that would ever be practical for quite a while, but in the event that it were, we've shown what the size of that kind of a plant would be if it were to be located within the plant boundaries. So, be happy to answer any questions that the board has.
Actually, why don't we... Is there any public questions from the public on this? Tom?
There is a couple.
Why don't we do those first, and then that might answer whatever questions we have. And I will make one comment. John, the date of the hearing got changed from September 6th to September 7th.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Circus was an isolated issue and something that was identified early on. And we had a building boom between 2004 and the time of the spill when, you know, the district was essentially swimming in money and could have funded the project at any point. I'm sure there are many times when people that worked at the plant walked past that issue or worked right around that equipment and perhaps documented that that needed to be fixed. And part of the investigation that we're asking for is, why wasn't that fixed? Plain and simple. I mean, sure, it's one spill. It was a major spill. It was a sewage spill. It spilled into your town. Okay. Surf Rider's been working closely with the district. We have some contact with Mr. Wallace and with Mayor Ferrara at some point. Our main concerns is we want to eliminate conflicts of interest at the plant. We want a good feeling as Surf Rider works with the sanitation district to build a water recycling program that works and is effective and is cost efficient for the ratepayers in this district. And with the political situation going on in the district and with the lack of transparency and public transparency and communications to the public and everything that goes on with lawsuits from former employees and sewage spills that, you know, we have to go to the hearing against the water board, and it's unclear how much of our legal fees go to protect the district versus go to protect the Wallace group. I think that we need to actually weigh this out and put these down in numbers, and this is what the investigation can give us. We hear lots of unquantified values from this analysis having to do with the plant. We hear them over and over again having to do with positions of district administrator and chief engineer at the plant. We need to quantify those things to see if the district is getting value. So thank you for taking my points tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Snick. Is there anybody else, Mr. Giesel?
Yeah, there's Ms. Carol Henson.
Ms. Henson?
I thought you said Mr.
No, I said Ms.
I was looking around for him. I just wanted to speak on, I had a question for Mr. Wallace or anyone who might be knowledgeable about the man covers. I think that was a very good idea to make sure that they were stabilized and they couldn't lift. However, I have a thought about that, and I don't know anything about it, but it would seem to me that when the manhole covers lifted because of the quantity and overabundance of water, that the areas that they lifted flooded. So if you were to stabilize them so they couldn't lift, then would the, and if there was, let's say, as much of an abundance of water as there was in that one incident, would the point of entry of where the water was going in, or if the water in those pipes were a combination of several points of entry. Would maybe the lowest point of entry then flood if the manhole covers couldn't lift to relieve the pressure and let them flood in the areas that were low-lying that they did flood? Then would you have a problem with wherever the points of entry were, whereas before they wouldn't have been a flooding problem, but now that the manhole covers can't lift and relieve that pressure, then maybe they would. You would have a new, different area, and that's just a thought about that. It could create a problem somewhere else by doing that. And then my other question was, while Mr. Wallace did tell us that the electrical was waterproof over there at the sanitation district, and the problem was with the wire, was with the junction box, I believe from my recollection the junction box was low, and of course it flooded. But then was all the wire have to be replaced since there was nothing wrong with the wiring? And he stated that all the wiring had to be replaced. Did it short out, or was it just another security measure to assure that, you know, there was no, you know, no faults or no things? And that was, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Henson. Is there any other request for public comment?
Yes, Ms. Brenda Auer.
Ms. Auer? Long time no see.
Yeah, I was just going to say I missed y'all. Brenda Auer, Grover Beach residents, and a fan of Oceano. I don't want to even pretend like I understand anything about how the sewage plant works. But I have a question about, and no one was there making sure people weren't walking through the water. I mean, it was, to me now, I'm just outraged about it. Can't let it upset you, but in the future, if this ever happens again, I think the most important thing is for the health and safety is to make sure that there was people down there just walking around in it all day, not knowing that they could be standing in contaminated water. So I think that that's a real important issue, however this resolves itself. And the most important is to look out for the people on the island. Okay?
Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you.
Mr. Gieselin, is there anybody else?
I don't have any book.
Mr. Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. President. Good evening, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. First of all, I wanted to mention that I'm involved with a regional board item on September 6th, and the comment period for those items, it closes on July 16th. So my suspicion is for a matter on 9-7, the comment period is going to be very close to that, so I'd encourage your board to get your comments in. Let me suggest that the events that occurred on December 19th, 2010 are just the beginning of things to come. As you may know, we're in a period of climate change. Climate change is characterized by wide swings and wide variations in precipitation. We're going to see periods of long drought, and we're going to see periods of high levels of precipitation. So the likelihood of this happening again in the foreseeable future, in spite of what's been done at the plant, is very significant. The administrative civil liabilities, the penalty was established at $1,383,007.50. It equates to about $1 a gallon. And in terms of what the state board felt the volume of spill was, just over 1 million gallons. The regional board has the ability to go up to $30 a gallon. So at $1 a gallon, you are at the very low end of the fine spectrum. In my view, the only direction this fine is going is up. And I think when, as was stated by Mr. Wallace, with conclusionary statements like, grossly overstated in referring to the state's estimate of the spill, it reflects an arrogance that I think will not play out well with either regional board or the state board if it goes there. So I think it's important to really look at how much is being spent to reduce this fine, this $1.3 million fine. Are you going to spend a dollar, or is the Sand District going to spend a dollar to save a dollar? There's a point of diminishing returns, and I think you really need to look at that number, and then ultimately what portion of that figure is this district going to have to pick up? Because as everyone knows, there's no insurance either at the Sand District level or at your level to pick up the fines. Ratepayers are going to have to pay them. So there's been discussion of special environmental projects to help reduce the fines. And as SEPs, as they're known, go above and beyond the fines, and they're not really used as a means to reduce them substantially, if at all. So I think it's really important. Who made the decision to hire the Sacramento consultant, the special counsel, special legal counsel, to fight this battle at the regional board on September 7th? Who made that decision, and what were the circumstances? And are you going to spend $1.3 million to save $1.3 million?
Thank you, sir. Is there any other public comment?
No.
Okay. Thank you. I'll turn it back over to you, Mr. Wallace. Yes. Any of those items you'd like to address?
Just a few in order to help clarify some things. Mr. Snook talked about operators of the plant walking by a junction box and not noticing that it needed repair. That box had been there for a long time. It had never malfunctioned before. And those kinds of what they call shunt trips, you don't want to trip them a lot in testing, because then you wear out the contacts in them. So to recognize visually that box might have a problem in the future if it had water inside, I think is not a correct observation. We do want to work with the surf riders on the water recycling. We did have them on our panel at the water recycling forum. And we value their services in helping us look at potential projects in the future that can make better use of some of this money that we are certain will have to pay at some point, some portion of this. Ms. Henson talked about what happens at the low point if you have a manhole locked. Of course, if it's sealed, the water does back up to the next link. We have a very benign watershed. We don't have much industry in our watershed, and so the material that we take out is very very good in terms of its rating by the EPA and by the state. And that winds up either in the valley with helping to grow cotton over there, or other similar types of material that are not edible crops, or going to some place like Santa Maria to be composted with green waste and then brought back. The fact is, when you go down to Walmart and buy the yellow bag, that's what's in the bag. It's not our stuff, but I mean, it's very similar. To talk about the amount of water that we spilled, when you look at the volume of water that was in the lagoon, it's probably, and I don't want to quote an exact figure, but about 0.1% of that water in the lagoon was our water. So it's a very, very small portion of the water that came in there from the rainstorm. Mr. Evers talked about how much will the district have to pay. I think that any responsible agency, when you're faced with an exorbitant allocation of fine, it's our responsibility, meaning the district, to protect the ratepayers and to challenge that, and that's what we're doing, rather than to say, you know, it doesn't matter, we'll just go ahead and pay it, because in our estimation, it wasn't appropriate and it wasn't accurate. So I'll be happy to answer any questions of the board.
And we forgot to have board questions. Vice President Lucy.
Hi, John.
Hi, Mary.
Are you ready?
Go ahead.
Okay. I know I asked all my special questions when you weren't on the agenda last time. Just a couple things. I think we're kind of beating around the bush here. As far as you mentioned... A couple things first. I want to back up. You said you couldn't get down to the beach to test the water. Right behind your plant, there is a levee, and you get up on top of the levee and you walk all the way to the beach. And so when you say things like that, it triggers me, because I walk the levee every day. I look at the plant every day to my right, you know, and I walk down to the beach. And I get onto Strandway, and I walk down to Pier, you know, every day. So when you say we couldn't get to the beach, it kind of hits a nerve. Okay, so With that being said, I'll try to be gentle on you.
Just to be responsive to it, and not being flippant, but we were busy.
Yeah, you were.
With all that was going on in the plant. It was very, very stressful, and the guys worked 24 hours plus, and we got down there as soon as we could. But we had multiple issues that we had to take care of in the plant.
So it wasn't an access issue. You'd mentioned that the beach was closed and because of high tide and that you couldn't get to the beach. And I'm telling you, you can walk right down and get to the beach.
I forgot to mention that there was also mandatory evacuation that the fire department and the police department, or sheriff rather, came in and actually told our guys that there's a mandatory evacuation. And we said, no, we're not leaving.
A mandatory evacuation of the island or the beach?
Of the island.
The island.
Island area.
The island area. Okay, so that leads me into the community outreach, right?
Yeah.
And I would say that most all the homes there were flooded 36 inches or higher in the house. Every single structure that I saw, it was waist high. And the drywall was ripped out. As you know, once you hit those walls, they got to come out. And you had mentioned community outreach, right? Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell me what the sanitation district has done for those 20 to 30 residents on that island to help them put those homes back together again. Because some of them are still working on their homes. And they've had to take it out of pocket. And you know insurance companies don't pay full price of what it takes to replace something. So you mentioned community outreach, and I want to know what you've done for that little community.
Well, it's a combination, as you know, of the county's interaction with those folks because of the flooding caused by the Meadow Lagoon as well as the flapgate issues. But we went to every house, every resident in that area, handing out flyers to talk about disinfection of anything that they thought had been contaminated. Again, our flow into that water was a very, very small, tiny percentage. And as you also know, maybe stormwater by itself has a lot of runoff and a lot of contamination in it without any sewage in it at all.
Okay.
And furthermore, most of those residents out there are either elevated above the base flood elevation as required by the flood insurance program, or they have flood insurance. Some people don't, we know. But.
So then I guess I'm confused again, because there is a discrepancy on how much how many gallons was spilled.
Right.
Okay, and so are you saying that your spill decided not to go out the front door to the island? Your spill went in another direction?
No. It all wound up in the Meadow Lagoon area or came back into the plant, as part of the spill was inside the plant itself.
So I'm still confused. How the little neighborhood outside your plant was severely impacted by this. Now, whether it was 500 gallons or a million gallons is immaterial. I mean, what has been done to help those people besides hand them a brochure that says you could be at risk for infectious diseases and stuff?
Yeah. Well, again, we've been working with the county to look at flooding alternatives and mitigation measures. And in fact, there was a flapgate issue that was upstream on the Rio Grande Creek that we worked with the county to identify and to help that situation be corrected. In terms of the direct aid to people in the community, we advised them. We cleaned up and disinfected some of the areas out there that we had access to. But that's the limit of our direct responsibility, except to say that we want to help mitigate this kind of a situation in the future.
Okay. I'm going to change gears on you a little bit, John.
Okay.
Will your attorney let you talk about policies and procedures?
Sure. Policies and procedures, sure.
Okay. So you are going to litigate the discrepancy in the fine? Is that been determined yet, or I don't want to use your words, but
no. What is happening is we received what's called a notice of violation, an NOV,
right.
And after discussing the NOV with the Water Board, we couldn't reach a conclusion, and so we've been issued what's called an administrative civil liability, mm-hmm. which they established the fine amount and the volume of the spill uh-huh. according to their calculations. And that will be heard before the Water Board on September 7th.
Okay, so who made the decision to take it that far?
Well, the Board of Directors has made that decision to
So the Board continue. Of Directors voted on to take it to the next step?
Well, I'm not sure about the word voted, but that was the decision that was made in terms of the closed sessions that were held on this regarding potential litigation.
Okay, but you're taking action, right? And whenever you go into closed session and take action, you usually come out and announce what
right.
the action was
right.
and what the vote was.
Unless it's unreportable because of the confidentiality.
Okay,
of the
so would $1.3 million fine be a big enough issue? Because it's obviously big enough that you're going to take it to the next step, right? I just want to know how you got to the next step. Who made the choice to go to the next step?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm asking.
Well, the board has directed themselves as well as staff to mitigate this potential fine. And so we are doing that.
Okay,
through the proper process.
Unanimously voted to.
No, I'm not saying that. I can't talk about actions that were taken in closed session. And I wish I could to tell you everything I know, but I can't do that. And I hope you respect that.
I do respect it. I just need to know, understand your process and who makes the decisions. That's all I'm trying to get to.
Well, the
is
board
who
of
makes,
directors
your decisions.
Makes the decisions.
So the board sits down and says, okay, you guys, so we're going to do this. Okay. And they all say, yeah, sure, let's
yeah.
move on, right? Or is there any way of registering? Maybe one person doesn't agree with that. Does that matter? Or because it's not a formal vote? So I'm just trying to figure out how you operate. So I think that's it for right now. Oh, and also, too, is that I noticed that... Then I got a notice that the California League of Mayors is meeting in San Diego September 6th, 7th, and I think their closing session is on the 8th. Hmm. And so your board holds to, you know, Arroyo Grande's mayor sits on your board.
Correct.
And Grover Beach's...
Mayor Pro Tem.
Mayor Pro Tem sits on your board. So if the California League of Cities is meeting in San Diego, will your board be at that hearing?
I can't answer that. I know that, I hope that our board attends a hearing here, but I don't know what their plans are.
Okay. I think it's real important to know because that's a really big, you know,
this is the first I've heard about the potential
that's a
conflict
big,
that you're speaking
conference.
Of. Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
A couple of questions, John. Can you explain why there's a difference between the sanitation district's estimate of the spill and the State Water Board's estimate of the spill?
Again, because of the potential litigation of it and the nature of the confidential settlement discussions, I'm not at liberty to talk about all the details except to say that we believe that the state's methodology is not correct and based upon assumptions that are not appropriate, and we believe that the research and the calculations that we've completed are more accurate.
And those were done from the, can you explain, I think you did talk about it in the presentation briefly, but if you could highlight that again on how basically the sanitation district came with a different number.
Well, we have a much greater detailed knowledge of our system than the state does. And fortunately, we've had computer models of the sewer system for some time for all the agencies that have been made available to us in Oceano's as well as the other cities. All the spill happened in Oceano, though. So there was nothing that spilled as a result of our actions in Grover Beach. But by having that computer model, you're able to more accurately determine the hydraulics of the system and what's happening depending upon how much water is coming in. And the state methodology, we believe, doesn't make use of that.
Thank you. Is there any other questions from the board?
Yes.
Director Hearn.
Good evening, John.
Good evening.
How are you this evening?
Well, thank you.
I have a couple of questions and then I think a statement.
Sure.
With the fine, it's already been set, and I do believe I commend you in wanting to save the district money if possible by stating your facts, stating your case, and perhaps bringing this fine down to something more acceptable or reasonable. We don't want to pay anything at all, but you know, the lesser of the evils. But isn't there a possibility that by taking this stance that these fees could possibly be increased?
The Water Board can adjust those fines, as was stated by one of the other speakers. And typically, very typically, they reduce them.
Okay.
Very rarely do they increase them, as far as I know, from what I've observed. And I think it's a matter of the testimony and the facts before the Water Board, and we hope that they're an impartial body and they listen to those facts, both from the legal standpoint as well as the engineering standpoint. So we have confidence that they will do the right thing, and they will adjust that fine to a reasonable level commensurate with the act. I keep saying it, but every wastewater system that I know of in this county, as well as in many counties, have spilled, and we have not spilled in 25 years. It's a very unbelievable record, and I think some of the critics that we have about that should recognize that all mechanical, electrical equipment at some point in the future spills. City of San Luis Obispo spilled during that occasion. Other districts spilled quite a bit of wastewater as well, and they do it more frequently. But we have had a very admirable record over the years at maintaining that plan and preventing those kinds of situations.
So that would be kind of a standard that is held up by the state?
They are, as I understand it, they are supposed to take that into consideration.
Okay.
Yeah. It's in their enforcement policy to take that into consideration.
That would be something that they would consider.
Right.
Okay. Second, on the surf riders' concerns.
Yes, ma'am.
Before I was on the board, I could see their concerns about an investigation. And at this point, I don't know where the funding would come from for an investigation. An investigation is a dual process because it can validate or exonerate. You know, and that's why I do like to see investigations take place, because the facts come out. But in lieu of an investigation, do the sanitary districts have peer reviews or people that could come in that from another area that would look at the practices that you use and make some type of determinations?
Yes, and we've gone through both the technical and administrative peer review at the plant, and perhaps you know we provided that information to the grand jury sometime in the back in the past. Your board has it, and the other member agencies of course have it.
I suggest I'll provide it to Mr. Gieselin and he can have it here at the office. The peer review, I'll provide it to you and it could be
right
here at the office if anybody wants to
be
with the grand jury.
We have a copy of it.
Is it on the website?
We never put it on the website. I was hoping the Sand District would put it up on their website.
Okay.
And it's a response back, but you'll be able to see it.
Okay.
It's self-explanatory.
Okay. Well, thanks, John.
Director Angelo?
Yeah, I just have one question. You said that you're working with the county to address the lagoon flooding.
Yeah.
What status are they at now? Are they doing anything, or have they got an idea going, or...
Well,
that's a big question.
It's a complicated answer.
Okay.
But as you know, the county has considered numerous scenarios of projects to help mitigate the flooding in the lagoon. They also are studying the water levels and where the water rose to and what levels and so forth, and attempting to calculate a more precise frequency of what that storm was. and they've also implemented procedures to do the environmental studies that are necessary to go ahead with a coastal permit. And part of that first project, as I understand it, is to cut reeds in the lagoon. I know that that's not the whole shmoly, but that will help the water flow through the lagoon in case of another flood. As you know, part of the lagoon was blocked by extensive reed growth. Mr. Schacker, who's been here before to testify about that, talked about how the lagoon has closed in over the years with reeds and sedimentation. And I think eventually there'll be some improvements to the lagoon that consistent with the environmental restrictions about dredging and so forth, but hopefully they'll be able to do something more substantive in the next year.
Is the state parks involved with that as well?
Yes, because part of that's state parks property. Yeah.
Okay. So whom are you working with in particular, the county with that? Is there any?
We've been working with Pava Ogren, the County Director of Public Works, as well as some of his staff.
Okay, that's it.
Thank you. Director White, do you have any questions?
I just have one little question. How much storm drain water goes into the plant, or does any of it go in?
No, that's a good point. Any water that falls on the plant itself
goes
into our headworks. It gets treated just as if it were sewage.
Well, I was thinking of water that comes off like Grand Avenue. Does that all just go into Meadow Creek?
Grand Avenue way up there would go into Meadow Creek or Royal Granny Creek, depending upon which way it falls on the watershed.
But it doesn't go into your
sewer? No. Okay. Only this is the first time we've ever seen this kind of flooding come into the plant.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. I think that's all the questions. Why don't we take a five-minute break? It's 12 minutes after 8, and we'll come back at 17 after. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
These seats are dumb uncomfortable.
You don't like them?
No.
I don't mind.
Someone put one over here.
If they're any more comfortable, I'd be.
They're kind of hard.
See, AGP's ready? Okay. Hey, Caroline, can you see if Mary's out there?
She's coming. She's got some cloth.
One more minute. It is 8:20 p.m. Moving on to item 10A, resolution 2012-05, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Oceano Community Services District confirming the report from the Five Cities Fire Authority regarding the weed abatement costs and directing staff to forward the assessments to the county auditor for collection. Chief Aranez, who's probably going to object next time we put him second in line.
No, I think he'll tolerate it.
Good evening, Chief.
Good evening, Board members. Joel Aranez, Five Cities Fire Authority. Tonight before you is the next step in our weed abatement program for this year. If you remember, back in April, we identified 62 properties that needed abating. We sent notices to those property owners, held a protest hearing, and the board went ahead and ordered that those lots abated. Between June 15th and 24th, the contractor to the authority abated those properties. They were sent their notices in April that their properties needed to be abated. So tonight I'm asking you to hold the protest hearing, and if there are no protests upheld, then we will submit that list to the county to have that those bills added to their tax roll. As I said, there were a total of 62 properties, and the totals in contractor fees, there was $4,469.10. In administrative fees, it was $5,589 for a total assessment of $10,058.10. If you have any questions on the process or what we have done to this point, I'll be happy to answer your questions.
I don't have any comments. Is there any public protest, Manager Giesling?
No, there's no public protest.
Okay, is there any public comment?
No, there's no public comment.
Is there any board questions or comment?
No.
No.
All right. I'll entertain a motion. Okay. I'll go ahead and make the motion. I'll make a motion that we've already taken one action that we've conducted.
I think what you need to do
is
read off the staff recommendation and take a vote on that. Roll call vote.
Yes. I make a motion that we note that we've conducted the required protest hearing and that we find no justifiable protests. We adopt the resolution authorizing the board secretary to attach the weed abatement costs to properties in the amounts listed on Exhibit A for assessments on the county tax roll.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Carol Ann, can I get a roll call vote, please?
President Guerrero?
Yes.
Vice President Lucy?
Yes.
Director Hurdle?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
And congratulations on your grant.
Thanks. Moving on to item number 10C, resolution 2012-06, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Oceano Community Services District confirming the charges against property owners for the collection of delinquent solid waste collection charges and directing staff to forward the charges to the county auditor for collection. Staff recommendation was board approval. Is there any public comment on this, Mr.
There's no public comment.
Can I get a staff report?
What this is, when we did this before, there were some language discrepancies, and so we modified the language in the resolution, and I need you to, just like you did on the last one, make a motion and get a roll call vote to carry this forward.
All right, is there any board comment or question?
No.
Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Go ahead.
I move that we approve resolution 2012-06, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Oceano Community Service District confirming the charges against property owners for the collection of delinquent solid waste collection charges and directing staff to forward the charges to the county auditor for collection.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Director White has seconded. Can I get a roll call vote, Carol Ann?
Director Hurdle?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Vice President Lucy?
Yes.
President Guerrero?
Yes. Motion carries 5-0. The next is item 2012-07. I had previously recused myself on this item, and so I will leave the room, and Vice President Lucy will take over. And the issue was that I live within 500 feet of Mr. Hill.
And that's a... Is that D10?
It's D, yes. And,
okay.
And again, it's the same thing. We had some language issues
right.
that we had to modify, and so you're basically restating the resolution and then a roll call vote.
Okay. Does somebody want to entertain a motion for resolution 2012-07?
I'll make a motion to approve Oceano Community Service District Resolution Number 2012-7, a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Oceano Community Services District confirming the charges against property owners for the collection of delinquent utility charges and directing staff to forward the charges to the county auditor for collection.
Can I get a second on that?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. Can you do a roll call vote, Carolyn?
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Hurdle?
Yes.
Vice President Lucy?
Yes.
And Director Guerrero has abstained, stepped out of the room.
Recused himself.
Recused himself. You can bring yourself back in now. Huh? Oh, motion carries 4-0, one abstention. No. Right? Yes.
Abstention or?
Yeah, he abstained.
Moving on to item number 10E, review and discussion and possible approval of proposed changes to district bylaws. Is there any public comments on this, Tom?
Nobody's registered one. Wait a minute.
Right. Mr. Rice?
Kevin Rice.
Kevin?
I guess if you turn in a comment card, you get to go first.
Good evening.
Thank you for your recognition. I'm really proud of what this board has become over the last year or so. I want to say that right up front. And I like the way the board's done business personally and the general manager's conducted things. I did watch and review the minutes or the board packet from the last meeting, and I'm a little concerned the direction you're going with public comment, although I understand the basis of what you're trying to accomplish. I think entertaining a consent agenda would be good because it would allow you to combine a lot of things into one item. I don't agree with limiting comment to just one point during the agenda. I think by using a consent agenda and having comment just on all those items together, that would achieve a majority of your goal. I think hearing items where a public hearing is required, you need to have separate comment for each hearing item. Now, there was some dissension over whether the public should get to comment after reports are given. As far as the general manager's report, I don't believe any public comment is required on that. Unless there's a board vote taken, the public has no real interest in commenting at that point in time because the board does not deliberate on the general manager's comment. But on a hearing item, if there's a presentation like Mr. Wallace gave, and then the board's going to vote based on partially what they saw, I do believe the public has a reasonable interest to also view that report before having to come up and make their comments. So what I saw was unfair, that the public has to comment at the beginning before they've been opportune to see whatever presentations are made before votes are given. So I just want to aver very strongly that the board should extend itself as much as possible to allow the public to speak after they've seen whatever presentations that the board is also going to be opportune to see, and that you perhaps limit public comment by combining your resolutions together, combining other items together on a consent agenda, and that you don't necessarily need public comment on each report, the sewer report, the general manager's report. Those aren't items the public doesn't need to comment on because you're not taking a vote on those items. But I do believe if there's a vote, you should allow the public to speak on that. And I think I'm just about out of time. I noticed a couple things are deleted on the policy here. I'm not particularly concerned about it. I think another speaker is going to mention it because the Brown Act already protects us on it's sort of repetitive. So as long as you follow the Brown Act, I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Ms. Tacker?
Good evening again. I am Julie Tacker, and I agree with Mr. Rice. What I find is that here we are before the presentation from your staff. So I see that we are amending your bylaws. There's not a written staff report. There are amended bylaws. They're not a strike-through copy, so it's quite difficult to navigate where the changes are. And I had to print them out, look at them line by line, measure. We've even changed the font. But what I found, I do have some concern. And it's such a lengthy document, and so many changes have been made that I would encourage you to take it to committee and thoroughly vet it, and then bring it back. What I saw first off is the removal of bylaw 110 that's dealing with dissension, And in short, the chairperson cannot stop speakers from expressing their opinions or their criticism of the body, and I think that should stay in. The new item 2.8, you are increasing from $5,000 to $7,500, and I am in agreement that that's a necessary change. I can't tell because the numbers are all new. New item 4.5, the audio and visual recordings may be erased some 30 days afterwards. In the day and age of technology and digital, I think their files are so small you can save them forever, and 30 days is too soon. Then item 7.9. Sitting directors should not enter into litigation against the district. Should a director enter into litigation against the district, it will be presumed that said director has a conflict of interest in all matters presented to the board for discussion and action. And I think that that's overreaching. When if you had a sewage backup at your house and you had an insurance issue and you had to sue the sanitation district and or the OCSD, that doesn't render you moot as a director to speak to the fire, the water, and all the other issues that your district does. So I think that particular bylaw is overreaching. Those are all my highlights and notations. Oh, there was one more. When we get to the director's compensation, I don't see that you have a committee stipend, and I think you deserve it. I think it's customary maybe $50 for your time at the committee level, and I think you might pursue that in the future.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Is there any other public comment?
No.
All right. Nobody else is standing up. I'll open it up for board discussion at this. Not board discussion. Chase, why don't we have some conversation about this document and how it came about?
If I may, and I would like to address. She left, but I'll address some of the questions that Ms. Tacker mentioned. Dealing with dissension, we did take that. It's not that we took that section out. We relocated. It's now at 2.11. We're not trying to do anything strange there. It just has been relocated to a more, I think, convenient location.
More natural in the document.
I will take you through the changes that we've recommended. By the way, these bylaws hadn't been changed or, I think, reviewed for quite some time. I was told 10 years. It may even be more than that. So I think we were due for a review of those. So Ms. Thurmond and I and with Director Guerrero took to reviewing these. We looked at other bylaws from other similar community services districts, and I think this is a good product. I'll take you through the changes that we recommend kind of page by page. There are some others, but the substantial ones that I'd like you to be aware of start at page 1 at line 2.2. The former rule used to say members of the board shall attend all regular. We've just added the term and special. So when possible, obviously, all board members are supposed to attend both regular and special meetings. Next line at 2.3, the new rule reads, the general manager in cooperation with the board at the prior meeting shall prepare an agenda for each regular and special meeting of the board. What we've done here is tried to give the board some flexibility, which will allow an individual director to approach the general manager to request an item to be put on the agenda. So it will give the board the ability to agendize items informally, talking to the general manager instead of having to have those items agendized at each meeting. Hopefully the intent there is to make the board more efficient in terms of getting things on agendas. If you turn the page to page 2, the next big change I wanted to draw your attention to, and it's not even really a big change actually, but it's a change, is new bylaw 2.8. This is not all that surprising. Our former rule called for roll call votes oftentimes, and a roll call vote for anything over, it used to be $5,000. We've increased it by $2,500 to, again, allow the staff some more flexibility. If it was $5,000 10 years ago, I think that a $2,500 raise in the amount probably is more than reasonable. So the next line is on page 3, rule 2.11. And this is the one that Ms. Tacker was, I think, interested in and asked some questions about. This is, from my view, this is tracking fairly consistently with the Brown Act. It basically says that if an individual or group willfully interrupts a meeting, fails to adhere to the district's policies pertaining to public comment, or otherwise creates an unreasonable disruption to the proceedings, the meeting may be stopped and the room may be cleared. What is reasonable and what is not reasonable obviously is going to be where people may differ, but if the public and our constituents can't hear or understand or really enjoy watching the process unfold before them because a group or certain groups of people are making it impossible to do so, it gives the chair the ability to clear the room. So I should probably stop there and see if there's any questions on anything that I've mentioned so far from the board.
I think that that also falls well within the description in Robert's Rules of Order, too. It puts forth the idea that if there are repetitive comments and things that aren't really relevant at the time, you know, those things are considered disruptive.
Well, and the important word is willfully.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is standing up to say something and it might not be directly on point, but there's a belief by the board that they're doing their best,
right,
that's one thing. But if the feeling is that this person is repetitively doing something to try to create some type of a distraction, that's where the rule would kick in.
I just had a couple. Did you carry any of these?
No.
There's actually more, but I just wanted to take a pause there and see if there's any questions on what you've covered so far.
On number 210.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I didn't jump over anything. On number 210, I thought that public comment needs to be directed to the president.
Well,
to be directed to the board as a whole, but I think it's supposed to be directed to the chair. Ponder it.
I will. I mean, what I'll tell you is that, you know, a number of other bylaws from other CSDs that we've looked at don't say that. Comments directed to the chair, fine. To the board, we could. I'm not sure it substantively makes a difference, but it's something we could add if that's. I should ask you why you think that.
Well, I guess it's a sign of one of respect, right?
Sure.
Is that you direct your comments to the person who's chairing, which is more than likely going to be the president of the board.
Sure.
And then it also doesn't, you know, that all the comments go to directed towards the president versus singling out a board member and going after that particular board member.
Right.
It eliminates that, but it doesn't. It doesn't censor public testimony. It's still there, but it's not harassing one particular board member, I think. But more than anything, I think it's a sign of respect for me.
Sure.
You know, and it allows things to be orderly and kept, you know, focused. So think about that. And then secondly, on 2.11, right, what about name calling and stuff? I mean, we've gotten to the point where, you know, just horrific name calling has gone on, and at what point can, you know, that be stopped? Without, I mean, you have to have a limit. It'd be nice. I mean, I think that people should, you know, I think they should be passionate about what they're speaking of, right? But when you get to the point where you're calling staff and board members, you know, hostile names, and, you know, threatening to call them out and stuff like that, I mean, obviously you have a problem.
If you're being threatened, then you absolutely have a problem.
Well, there's a threat, veiled threats, you know.
I think it would have to, it would really depend on the context, I think. You know, if someone is saying, I think it was really stupid to do X, then...
Well, that's fine.
That they have a right to do.
That's their opinion, you know. But, you know, when you start calling staff members, you know, names and things like that, you know.
I think that's protected by free speech.
If they are not threatening you or harassing you in some way, then they have 3 minutes to say their piece.
Okay. Because I don't believe in censorship, but I also don't believe in harassing and taunting people either. So, okay.
Well, to your comment about 2.10, the last sentence says, public comment shall be directed to the board as a whole and not to any member individually.
Right.
So it would, I believe the rule does protect individual board members from, you know, direct target. If the comments are to the board as a body, then, you know, the rule would protect against individual targeting.
Okay. Thanks.
Sure.
Any other questions to this point, Karen?
Well, I was just going to back Mary up on what she said. It seems like it should be directed to whoever is presiding at the meeting, because they're the people that are in control. They're supposed to be controlling the meeting. So, I mean, you can't really speak to the board as a whole. You need to speak to Matt, it seems to me.
One of the things I'll point out is that on 2.8, the last line is that unless a board member states that he or she is not voting because of conflict of interest, his or her silence or abstention shall be deemed and recorded as an affirmative vote. Mm-hmm. That's an important change for us. So we've seen, of course, not in our organization, but we've seen in other organizations where somebody refuses to vote on a hot topic for whatever reason, and so that's what we're trying to avoid. I think the public is asking us to vote. And so, is everybody comfortable with that?
That rule actually is supported by case law as well.
Yeah.
That when a public elects you to be on a board, they don't elect you to stay silent on controversial votes. They,
right.
They hire you to get up there and say yes or no.
Yes.
No.
Okay, please.
But
continue,
we can't, I mean, as to 2.10, your change, I mean, these are your bylaws. They can be amended how you like them. And it would be very easy for us to change that to say that public comment shall be directed to the chair, if that's what the board is more comfortable with. But if we continue on to the other changes to point out, there's really no big changes in 3 or 4. Actually, that's not true. On page 4, there's change in 4.5, a bigger one that I wanted to direct your attention to. That is the other one that Ms. Thacker mentioned, which is the audio and visual recordings may be erased after 30 days. I'm aware of no law that requires us to keep them for any period of time, but we thought 30 days was sufficient. It actually is a cost to the district to maintain and keep all of those. And this was our recommendation was 30 days was sufficient.
Does anybody think that it should be longer? I mean, there's 30, 60, 90. They're usually in monthly increments.
I think that should be perhaps 60 days, 90 days. 30 days is kind of short. I believe the fact that because we are in the information age, that a little more time would be, I think that provides a little more transparency, actually. You know, if you're just going to just... pardon me? Yeah.
There's two issues that need to be addressed in this. One is that we have AGP that comes in and films, and then we get a DVD set, and we've got a DVD set going all the way back to whenever it started. And then on the one of the websites, there is a link to our meetings where you get the audio portion, and but we don't place those up on the website. But if somebody were to come in and say, hey, I'd like to see it, we could transfer it to a thumb drive or whatever. I don't, you know, we're paying the cost already. We get the DVDs and we have the archive. I think the real question here is that in order to be transparent, we upload it to the website and then we leave it there for 30 days and then we take it down because our storage space is somewhat limited. And where the Board of Supervisors has all theirs logged and you can actually go online, I think the real issue is how long do we keep it up? So, because we will always have a hard copy for it. It's just how long do we keep it up in the ability for transparency and keep it up on the website. That's the major issue as I see it.
Okay, I like the idea of the having access to it from the website for 30 days, but I'd also like to see a hard copy for 90. I think that is really...
Well, the hard copy is always going to be there.
Right, that's cool then. Okay.
Okay, so we just post for 30 days. That's typically what most people do. They post for 30 days, and then they pull it down and put it in their archives, and they charge to get in there.
Okay.
So I think what the language would need then, if I follow you guys, what you're saying is that the language...
Public posting.
Should be that it's posted on the computer? I mean, what would we do now? We would say post it to the website for a period X of 30 or 60 days?
Exactly. 4.5 will have to be amended fairly substantially to address the concerns of the board. So we're now kind of getting into that point now where I wouldn't recommend adopting this set.
Right.
We'll have to re-agendize it for another time probably to have another look at it, but I'll need to go back and make the adjustments. But what it essentially would say is the last sentence of audio and visual recordings would be taken out and replaced with the process that we store them. So we say, you know, they're kept as a hard copy for how long?
Why don't we say 5 years or something?
Okay.
Why don't we say 5 years? If the district chooses to keep them, obviously the district can.
And the other thing you got to remember, too, is that... The other thing you got to remember from our friends, and this is hearsay, but from our friends at AGP, we are probably the most watched board on Channel 21, and that airs until we have our next meeting. So we're constantly being aired on their thing as well. So as far as Sunshine goes, I know there's a lot of boards that don't air on television, and we do. I don't understand why we would need to take it any farther than we already have. So
right. So you're just going to change the language to say something like public posting electronically will be for 30 days.
Correct. The language would be changed to video or audio, whatever would be available, and it is going to be posted on the website for 30 days, hard copy kept for 5 years.
Sure. And I think it's
hard copy archived.
Correct.
The video, audio, recording, in whatever form it's taken. Yeah, you can massage the language.
Exactly.
Because it may not be audio or videotaped, but if it is, it may be one or the other. So.
All right.
All right. Keep going, Chase.
All right. Continuing on, the next change that substantive change that I want to make you aware of is item 6.5. It says the new rule will be the board at a regular or special meeting may authorize a director or staff to speak or communicate on behalf of the district to represent the district at a meeting or related function. Otherwise, board members attending such events as described above shall make it clear that they are speaking on their own behalf and not representing the district or its board of directors. In other words, this is just,
6.5.
Control on the board members to allows them to go to meetings and participate in those meetings, but when they do so, they must make clear that they're not speaking on behalf of the board of Oceano, unless they've been given that authority from the board itself.
That's fine. Yeah, I can only sense that though.
Next page, item 7.1. specifically, there's really no substantial change here other than item C. I did want to point that one out to the board. It is the intent of the board of directors to, and then item C says, protect staff from undue influence, threats, and or pressure from individual board members or members of the public. The change there is or members of the public. It's always been the policy of the board to protect staff from other board members. And we're now including in that staff being harassed or bothered by members of the public unreasonably.
My only question there, Chase, is it doesn't say harassment explicitly. I mean, I understand that when I see pressure, but can we add harassment?
We can certainly add harassment since we're going to be doing some new changes anyway. It protects staff from undue influence, threats, harassment, and or pressure from individuals.
I would like to add that. Does anybody have any concerns about adding harassment?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes.
You do?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
Yes, add it.
Okay, yes, add it. So we would like to add that then, Chase.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Item 7.2 deals with individual board members making requests to the general manager and the general manager's response to those requests. The added language is actually the last half. Starting 5 lines down, the sentence begins with, if the general manager cannot timely provide the requested information because it is not presently available or its production would cause an interruption in work schedules or workloads, then the general manager shall inform the board member why the information is not available or cannot be made available in a timely manner and when it may be made available. So, this is similar to what a number of other CSDs have, just in terms of the relationship between the board and general manager. Next rule will be 7.4. Very minor change here. The former rule used to say, it's basically, the rule is, in handling complaints from residents, property owners within the district, or other constituents, directors are encouraged to listen carefully to the concerns, but the complaint should be referred to the general manager for processing, and district response was what the old language said. We've amended that to say the appropriate response. Sometimes complaints from constituents might not always fall into, federal case type level of complaints. They could be easily handled by something informal by the general manager or the staff, and just wanted to give them that flexibility.
Agreed.
I question that.
Absolutely.
The appropriate response, if any. Well, there should never be a case where there's no response, even if it's just calling somebody and...
What I meant by... What's meant there, if any, is that some complaints might not be able to be answered right away. They could just be a complaint of, or really more of an announcement of some type. A resident or a constituent might come in and say, I wanted the district to be aware of X. There might not be an appropriate response to be made at that time the complaint is made, but it could be something that happens later.
It just sounds kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you just said thank you to the person, it would be an appropriate response.
Sure.
If any, is what I'm...
Okay.
Are you suggesting, Karen, that we
omit the
strike
language,
if any?
Yeah. Okay. Omit if any.
I don't have any objection to that. And does anybody else?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And the next one I want to make you guys aware of is item 7.9.
Great.
This was also raised by Ms. Thacker as a concern of hers. Sitting director should not enter into litigation against the district. Should a director enter into litigation against the district, it will be presumed that said director has a conflict of interest on all matters presented to the board for discussion and action. We've squared this with cases and the law in California. The reason we're recommending that language is because when a person is in litigation against a body, they stand to gain financially from that. And it's difficult to, and really that can taint every decision that's made by that individual board member. That's how I see it. And which is why we're recommending that rule. Yes.
Well, I really have issues of sitting directors suing the people they're representing. I just can't get over it how you can sit at this table and file a lawsuit against the people who elected you. You know, and I know legally you can't stop it, but it should say, you know, sitting directors should not enter into litigation, and if so, should resign from the board of directors. That's what it should say. You know, we can't use the word mandate, but we can use the word should. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't sit here. We've had past directors sit here and sue the people that elected them. You know, and it's cost us thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars because they also have free flow to that office up front and have just ripped our records apart building their personal cases. So I think there needs to be language in there that says should step down as a sitting director.
Because the conflict of interest is created once you mm-hmm. sue. I mean, that's
whether they're in conflict or not, ethically, it's wrong.
But that's the conflict of interest. How can you represent somebody that you're suing?
Well, what the rule does as we've written it is it prevents that director from making any decisions that would bind the constituents of Oceano under what is really a cloud of doubt in their ability to serve the people. And I agree with you. I mean, if they're suing the people that they represent and they're continuing to make decisions for those very same people, I don't really think, I mean, that's a conflict. Almost plain. I mean, plain and simple. There really is no.
So can we put put language in there that says a director should step down as a sitting director?
I don't know about that. That's the question. And so, since we're going to be amending these anyway, I'll undertake that and try to find you an answer on that. I'm comfortable with the conflict. I'm not sure about
making them step down.
Forcing them to leave office.
Well, no, it's not a force. It's not a mandate. It's should. It's not, you know, saying, you know, you legally have to or, you know, you're mandated to or anything. It says you should.
Well, we have that language in the first sentence of 7.9. Not that they should step down, but we have the initial policy of you shouldn't sue the people that you represent, period. If you do,
you should step down.
We're not going to let you make decisions for them or continue to do that while you've got a case pending against them. In terms of stepping down and actually ceasing to be a director, not sure about that. I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, but see, if you allow them to, I mean, not allow, but if they choose to continue to sit, right, then the people are losing out again because they're losing another advocate. That seat can be filled with somebody who wants to fight for the people of Oceano. So we lose out still. Not only do we have a Yahoo suing us, right, but now they're holding our seat hostage. And I know we can't mandate, and it's a violation of people's, you know, freedom of speech and da-da-da-da, but the word should is flexible enough that they should do the right thing. They probably won't do the right thing, but we can't force them to do the right thing.
So I understand your proposal would be, what I'm hearing is that you like the language as it is, but potentially an unadded sentence of they should
step down.
Okay. I'll look into that.
Okay. Yep. Thank you.
You bet. Next is director compensation. Many other CSDs around here are paid more than, you know upwards of $150 per meeting. I thought it was time for the Oceano Board to get a $25 raise per meeting, and which would also include special meetings. However, having said that, 8.3, director compensation shall not exceed $600 in any one month. That is the same as it was in the last bylaws. That number hasn't changed. The only number that has changed is an increase from 100 to 125
for regular and special meetings.
And then the math doesn't work because it's either going to be 625 or 750.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the reason why that is, just a little history here, is that, you know, because of the financial chaos of the district, we agreed that it used to be, I think it was either six, I think it was 650 actually per month. But the bigger committees like the sand district, the zone 3 board, the, you know, the bigger time consuming subcommittees that each director sits on, what, yeah. You said it, not I, you know.
That's a dirty word.
That committee, you know, it's actually a retreat each time they meet, but that they got $50, you know, which that committee is not even worth $300, you know. But so that's how it came out to that. So if you had one regular meeting each month, right, I mean two regular meetings, that's $200, and then you had two subcommittees, you know, that's, you know, $400 a month or something like that.
Yeah, for doing it.
And that's how the numbers came out to that. So then when there was a financial crisis, the board agreed that, no, we won't. We'll just take, you know, our little $100 for the general meetings. So it probably should be put back in place because Lori and I are being beat to death by a couple subcommittees. And Tom takes the morning shift.
And it was something that you and I didn't talk about over the weekend, and for everybody to know, Chase and I think have seen or talked to each other every single day.
I don't know
how many days in a row, but it's been quite a bit, including over the weekend we saw each other twice. You know, we did not discuss the committee meetings. There was some suggestion that they're $50 a piece or something. I think we've had that in the past, haven't we?
Yes.
Yeah, we have, right. And, you know, not that anybody does this, you know, I see this as community service, but not that anybody does it for the money, but maybe it is an incentive to go ahead and have meetings.
Is $50 an appropriate amount in the board's view?
It's always been $50. I don't think, you know. I mean, some committees, yeah, you know, but no, $50 is I think, overly fair on both sides.
They're usually quicker meetings.
Unless it's the RAC meeting.
What we have here.
That should be dinner at Jocko's.
Hazardous duty pay.
With drinks.
Oh, so that would go under 8.1.
Yep, I think. And 8.3 will probably have to be amended also.
Does anybody have any suggestions on what to amend the 8.3 number 2? That's the $600 top. Okay. Or should it be amended?
625.
Pardon?
Is it state law?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess we leave it at 600.
Yeah.
Okay.
1980s.
Thank you.
I'll keep going, Chase. So are we through with 8.8s?
Yep, we are.
Okay. Let's go to 9s.
The only change in 9 that really is of note is 9.1 subdivision C, which is mileage reimbursement. This is pretty standard. It's set by the Internal Revenue Service at whatever rate they reimburse at. Mm-hmm. Nothing scary right now. I think it's 55 cents a mile right now.
55 and a half.
55 and a half cents a mile.
And a half.
All right.
And California follows that, the federal standards, I think, don't they?
Correct. They
because
do.
Some states will adjust because of the economy. It's different.
If you turn the page, the next substantive change to look at is down at number 13, item 13.2. We included the general manager in the encouragement to get continuing education. The board was encouraged in the past, and we've also included whoever is serving as the general manager should also be encouraged to attend educational conferences and professional meetings to improve the district operation.
Most definitely.
Yes. Any concerns with that from the board? I don't think so.
The last big change, and this one is a big change, is item 15.7. And this deals with the budget and how to review it and how to prepare it. We I don't think that the bylaws had been amended to reflect Government Code 61110. That is the budget process by which community services districts adopt and propose new budgets every year. The language that has been included in 15.7 and the subdivisions A, B, C is taken strictly from that code section. There's no changes really other than just the way it works now is that on or before June 1st of each year, the Board of Directors would adopt a preliminary budget that conforms to the generally accepted accounting procedures, and the preliminary budget is prepared by the general manager. So once you have that preliminary budget, you have until September 1st to adopt it as the final. The one change, I shouldn't say it was, I spoke too quickly actually. I added subdivision B just to keep some time controls on there because June 1st to September 1st, kind of a long period of time. And if we adopt a preliminary budget on or before June 1st, it should be no later really, I think, than July 1st before the board to get out the requisite notice to the public that they're going to be having a hearing to discuss the final version of the budget. So the whole process would work thus. June 1st of each year, a preliminary budget is adopted. On or before July 1st of each year, the Board of Directors publishes a notice in a newspaper of general circulation telling the public the date, time, and place of when the Board is going to meet to adopt the final. And then item C, on or before September 1st of each year, the Board actually adopts the final.
I think all that's great, except for sometimes things don't, the train sometimes doesn't run on time, right? So there needs to be a clause in there that says, unless staff recommendations state otherwise, or something that, you know. I mean, I don't want to violate this bylaw because the building fell down around us and, you know, we couldn't, you know, make it out the door in time. So, just a little disclaimer in there that says, you know, unless, you know, staff recommendations or something like that. Something.
Some sort of good cause, continuance.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Is that even available to us under 61110?
No. So I'll have to look at that issue also.
Okay. It might be that you could just add another line that encompasses the whole entire thing.
Well, that's what D is.
Okay.
The procedures for adopting a budget shall comply with Government Code Section 61110.
Okay.
So where the reason I put that stepwise process in there is because I've added the requirement that it's before July 1st that the notice be sent to the public. So in other words, June 1st happens. By that time, we're going to have some type of a preliminary budget. By July 1st, which is 1 month later, we have to have sent out notice to the public letting them know that we've got the preliminary budget and that we've set a hearing date for them to come and talk about it.
Uh-huh.
To July 1st to September 1st is a two-month-long period for us to have meetings and have the public come in and weigh in on the budget. I think, you know, I don't know the answer to your question as whether or not there's some kind of way to get a good cause exemption for it. My guess is there's not. And the reason why is because 61110 has some fairly generous time, components in it already.
Right.
But
you're a quarter way through the year.
Exactly. It's all right. It's a number of months. But I'll look at it since we're going to be amending some other things anyway.
Any other questions?
It might just be something. Yeah. I'm hearing noises out there. I'm hearing a lot of natural disasters out there. But it might be,
we have $181,000 check.
I think that if a flood happened and this building fell in, I'm pretty sure you'd be forgiven for that.
Right. You're not going to get sanctioned for
you'd be surprised.
Thelma, do you
yes,
have any?
Could we revisit the public comment?
Yes.
I
Like, if we go to the consent agenda, reports would be included in the consent portion, correct?
Well, are you...
No. Okay, and the reports would not be... Okay, what I want to know is, to me, it makes sense that presentations are reviewed first before people make comment. That really, truly makes sense to me. So we need to get... I would like to see us get to that. I don't know how anybody else feels. But
that's
I think
in another document, isn't it?
Pardon me?
Isn't that in another document?
That's the resolution, I think, that you're talking
correct.
About.
Correct. It's a different document, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Some
of the policies...
Which number are you on?
No, that's the problem. Hold it. We're getting a little off track here.
Right.
The bylaws have rules for governing public comment.
Okay.
The resolution that you're talking about isn't on the agenda for today.
Okay. Yeah, it is.
So,
these are great.
I've got some marching orders.
Go ahead, Chase.
Thank you.
That's it.
So we'll just bring that back for review and approval at the next meeting on July 25th.
And if any of the public, you know, wants to put in on weigh in on these policies and procedures on how we operate the district, you know, we do look forward to hearing from people.
We'll move on to item number 10F, California Special Districts Association 2012 Board Elections. Is there any public comment on this, Tom? All right. Why don't we have our staff report then?
Staff report is you got a copy of Mr. Esselman's resume, which was posted on the website. I'm bringing it back to you.
No, it's on the back.
Yeah. I'm bringing it back because I have to respond. And there's nobody else running, and he will represent us. But you guys last time said, oh,
who is
I don't
this
know
guy?
Who is this guy. Right. So I did some research, put it out, and put it back on the agenda.
Sounds pretty competent.
Say again?
It sounds like he's pretty competent.
Yeah,
Oildale?
Be careful.
No, I just realized it was actually
Oldale. Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that. I just thought it was a joke.
I don't have any concerns given the one candidate. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
Good luck, bud.
Just, yeah, give it to him. I mean, he's willing to do it.
Careful what you ask for.
So,
really.
We need a motion and a vote. Roll call vote, please.
I move that we accept Steve Esselman from North of the River Municipal Water District as the representative to the CSDA Board of Directors. What else do I need to say?
I second it.
We have a motion and a second. Carol Ann, have a roll call vote.
Vice President Lucy?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Director Hurdle?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
President Guerrero.
Yes, motion carries 5-0. And just for housekeeping, who needs to sign that? Tom, do you sign that? Do I sign
it? I sign it. Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. We'll direct staff
to have a vote.
We do have a vote, 5-0. Passes.
And I can just attach the minutes and then we're good.
Thank you. We'll have Tom send that out. Moving on to item number 10G, 2009-2010 audit update.
Okay, the audits, which you guys approved and accepted last meeting, have been in the county. They've vetted them, and they're fine with it. One question did come up, and there was what they call a management letter, but it made no sense to spend district money to go do the management letter because none of us were here except Miss Lucy.
And I voted against it.
Yeah, and you also voted against it. So the controls and everything were not in place. There's findings that said you needed to fix these things, which we have, but the ship has already sailed. The horse is already out of the barn, and I couldn't see you spending district money to do get different things from the accounting consultants or myself to go put something that happened almost actually over 3 years ago. So Other than that, we are fine. It'll be in the next batch of audits, and we will put that in because we came in on the tail end of that, and we'll go forward. So that's where we are in that. We're having a staff meeting next week to go over with the auditor what their demands are going to be and what they're going to want to test so staff can go ahead and pull that stuff together. And we are on track to get the third missing audit complete. So I'm really excited about that. Okay, and the staff's really excited because when it gets done, their general manager's treating them to steak and lobster. So
nice.
All right. Yeah. So and that's the general manager treating them, not the district. So I want to make that really clear.
Excellent. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much, Tom. I know those audits have been a big headache because they were so, so old.
Well, unless you finish that, you get to start another one.
Say what?
After you finish
that. Then we get to do the one that we were 10, 11, really responsible for. So that, right. That's even exciting, too.
Moving on to item number 11, utility items. A fee letter APN 062-083-013, OCSD project number 6439, owner/project. Brink.
Actually, we moved mine to 11-0, my OCSD report.
Yeah.
We can do Brink.
Why don't we do Brink? I just called it. I've got it. I wrote it after this.
Okay. So what I have here is Mr. Brink has some property that he's going to develop on Frontage Road on Front Street. And
where?
It's the address is right there. When they first did the analysis of the property, different rules were in effect, and there were some misconceptions taken by the architect, thinking that we had sewer and water right to the property, and we don't. It's actually in the alleyway. So we had to recalculate fees based on where we are and to provide the service to them because they're responsible for the front fees and then frontage fees. And then the other thing was that with the new fire sprinkler ordinance that went in place, we have our one-inch valve that we need to service, and your board has already taken action on the fact of what the charge is going to be, but all that had to be recalculated. So we, Doug Grossart and Aaron Hughes, myself, and the builder and the architect have reviewed this in great detail, and there's a new letter going out to which I need you to approve tonight.
And the $16,008.88 is the correct amount?
That's the correct fee letter, yes.
And he said it's on Front Street. We're out on Front Street. It doesn't have
Front.
I didn't see the address. He's developing all of Front Street?
Brink used development, mixed use development.
It's right next door to the
Melodrama.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That one, okay. I spoke to this gentleman, too. All right.
Right.
Does that include the corner, too, the building on the corner that's green and vacant?
It's between two buildings. Yeah. Where the
trenches. This is a whole brand-new building.
I think it's between the two buildings. There's a wooden fence there right now.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Do I have to recuse myself from within...
And how many hookups are there going to be?
You have property within 500 feet. You need to recuse yourself.
Yeah. Step away from the table.
So Director Angelo is recusing herself for having property within 500 feet.
So anyways, we've been dealing with this for a couple months now, and I met with Mr. Brink, and then Doug has also met with Mr. Hatch, the architect, and got all the discrepancies worked out. So the idea here is to give him the new fee letter and extend his will serve letter. And I need to tell you, I'm really excited.
Great.
Because people are starting to realize, which we've been asking all along, to start developing in Oceano, and it's starting to come back again. And it would be in our best interest for this all to take place because. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a class building. It's going to accent the melodrama, and it's going to create nicer upscale places for people to do business in the mixed-use environment. So I'm asking you to approve it so we can get them going and allow them to go achieve what they need to achieve.
Is there any public comment on this?
I didn't have any.
Seeing nobody stand up, is there any board comment or is there a motion?
Is it residential upstairs, mixed use? So is it stores downstairs?
Commercial downstairs and residential upstairs.
And how many hookups?
One.
Yeah.
There's one hookup at this point.
So
that's not uncommon. We have apartment buildings that have one hookup, and the landlord pays the water.
Right. So is there four units upstairs, four units downstairs, two? Just out of curiosity.
There were several offices downstairs, and I think one resident upstairs.
Okay. That's Thelma answered enough.
Is there a motion on?
There is lease space. There's two lease spaces and a lobby. On the downstairs portion, there's a covered patio and covered walkway, and then a utility room to stairs up, and then there are one living quarters on top with a caretaker's quarters as well.
Great. Okay, that's good, Tom. I got a sense of the whole thing. I move that we accept APN 062-083-013 OCSD project 6439, the Brink Mixed Use Development.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Is this have to be a roll call
vote?
Okay, roll call vote. Carolyn?
Vice President Lucy?
Yes.
Director Hurdle?
Yes.
President Guerrero?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0. Director Angelo having recused herself, excuse me. Why don't we move on to items number... Director Angelo can come back.
Does she get to come back?
She had left the room. We'll move on to item number 9C.
Now it's 11.
Now it's 11C, but formerly known as 9C. Report of OCSD operations. Mr. Gieslin.
Okay. Today is July 11th. In honor about this time, aside from when I first said I would do this on June 24th of 2011, we held our first board meeting. And I'd kind of like to remind everybody how this all came about. I grew up in Napomo. I knew of Oceano. I played in the dunes. I've done everything that was there. If you remember, when I ran Supervisor Teixeira's campaign along with a committee, and we spent time in Oceano, and during that time in Oceano, we were approached during the campaign, and you were notifying us that there were some problems here, and there was a whole bunch of questionable activities going on in the district itself. And both Paul and I said, we can't help you now because we're in the middle of the campaign. But once the campaign settles down, you know, contact us and we'll see what we can do, right? So we won. Paul won, and he became our supervisor. And your directors came to him and said, we need help. This thing isn't working. We're not getting any answers. And Paul said, okay, I will talk to a few people. And so he came to me and said, hey, do you have time? Oceano's in trouble. You know, we really want to prop them up. So I came in at the bequest of your directors on a couple Saturdays, and I analyzed what I could at the time. And then I presented a plan, which hangs on my office wall, which you guys all got. And you brought me in along with, I believe it was six other people, and you interviewed them all. And at the end of the meeting, you selected me based on my past business knowledge. You got a list of fairly, I think, an impressive resume list, and they all have basically said, yeah, he can do this and do it quite well. And I jumped in. And I started executing that plan. Some people say that it was a political favor. It wasn't a political favor.
As a matter of fact, after what I've spent here in a year, it's probably some punishment for some past act I did that I can't remember, but somebody's making it happen. During that time in that first meeting, I tried to give you where we were financially. I discovered that at that time everybody was hot about the Tyler system, but the bigger problem was the AS400, and I identified that you hadn't had books closed in 3 years. I identified that that previous boards, with Mary Lucy abstaining, had passed budgets that didn't have numbers in them. And we basically said, we're not going to worry about the past. We're going to go forward. And I started executing that plan. And the first thing I did was I got the finances taken care of. I got the water bills paid, which you were getting letters from everybody else. I made a management decision that I was going to work with the employees that were here, and I discussed that with the board because I felt that the previous management team had oppressed them and they weren't allowed to do their jobs, and we took job descriptions and came forward, and I had one-on-ones with every employee and basically said, we're going to turn this around, and this is the chance for you to write your legacy, because the other management's not here. You know how to do your job better than everybody else. We're going to improve customer service. We're going to get our hands around the financials. We're going to get our operation so it becomes a model utility. And that was the goal from day one. And the majority of the employees accepted that. And we jumped in with both feet and not being able to touch bottom and kept knocking things off. And I sat through several board meetings where I gave you a list of the accomplishments that we did. And I was going to give you a list tonight, but I'm not, because that's over and we need to go forward. But I believe the community of Oceano knows what we're doing, because when I'm grocery shopping or whatever, I will get people walking up to me and say, keep doing what you're doing. Don't let them beat you down. Just keep going. So, but I will tell you that we did get two of the three audits done. We did get a budget, and we worked to it, and we came in the black. I did save the FEMA money with the help of staff. That is bringing us money back so we can do capital improvements. We rewrote the policies and procedures manual. All that stuff was very concentrated, strong workout effort. And most of you know that I start here before 7:30. I'm usually the last one out the door, except for Tuesdays. Tonight we're going to go probably till 11 o'clock at night. I attend other meetings on behalf of the district. I go and I fight for this district, and I fight for the people of Oceano. And in a perfect world, it would be a wonderful year. But unfortunately, I've had to suffer the slings and arrows of people that I'm still questioning why. Because it'd be one thing if I was just going through enrichment and padding my pocket and playing golf every day and going to every meeting that served a lunch. That's not in the best interest of the district. And it has caused a considerable amount of strain on me and the staff, and it's caused a considerable amount of strain on you guys too, because you see me getting distracted or beat down or whatever. But I promise you I'm going to continue. And I'm going to continue because I care about the people in Oceano. I care about this board, and I don't want our hard work to ever be destroyed. I've gone out when I see wrongs, like the Air Pollution Control District and the Fugitive Dust Rule. I've gone out and spoken. I've seen wrongs about the over-the-road fees, where the money wasn't distributed for 4 years and gave the county the opportunity to step to the table and get that corrected. And I've been working on that with Chief Aranis. I've worked very hard for the JPA to find other revenue sources for them by getting using all the scraps we can get our hands on and building them an adequate training center, which they can get revenue to get other revenue. And I'm looking and working with the citizens of Oceano and this board to get other revenue sources for Oceano as well. Some of them we've talked about, some are on the back burner, because Rome wasn't built in a day, and we need the time to make the connections that we need. This past month, we've all had to deal with some very unsavory things that I never dreamed I would have to dream because, or dream that I'd have to deal with. But I acted quickly, I acted efficiently, and in conjunction with our council, I put the district out of harm's way on these issues. We hired, not we, but council hired a retired FBI agent with 30 years, of which the night that we had the Eagle Scout presentation, that young man's father is an FBI agent, and I ran it by him who we had, and he said, Tom, he's one of the best in the business. And to put it in perspective, you all remember the Yosemite killings where the mother and daughter are on vacation and they got taken from this earth. And this was the guy that got Kerry Stainer to confess to those crimes when the law enforcement had arrested somebody else. And he's worked on significant high-profile cases. And we didn't just interview the employees, we interviewed every board member as well. And I'm not at liberty to talk about the interviews, and the formal report has not come out. But I will tell you that we did everything we possibly could to protect everybody that was involved. And there are things that have come out that I just shake my head and go,
really?
Yeah, really. So we issued a press release, and I want to read that to you tonight because all the media agencies picked it up, but nobody took it in its entirety, but that, you know, that's their job. They got to get two sides. But I want it read for the record, and I'm going to read it as follows. For immediate release, Oceano, a terminated Oceano Community Service District employee, claims that he was forced to watch pornographic material while at work and he has launched an immediate investigation, according to the report from the district. Stephen A. Langstaff, 52, of Oceano, received a dismissal notice on December 13th for 2011. On June 7, 2012, he filed a formal harassment and wrongful termination claim against the district, General Manager Tom Gieslin and Field Utility Supervisor Dan Silvera. So he filed it against the district, myself, and his immediate supervisor. The claim alleges in part that during working hours, Silvera would call Mr. Langstaff and other male employees over to his desk to review pornography he was displaying on his computer at the district water yard. The claim also charges Silvera continued after Langstaff objected and also made sexually related comments to the Girl Scouts. Now, that has not been proven, but it's alleged in the claim. Unaware of pornographic allegations until the receipt of the claim, Gieslin said he immediately secured the computers believed to be involved and conducted an initial investigation of all employees to determine if sexual harassment allegations were true. Gieslin also retained a professional investigator to conduct the full investigation. So in this press release here, I did grab the computers, but I immediately turned them over to district council, and it was district council that got the investigator to come on board and look at it. But our district council, prior to that, did review everybody on the situation and got their side. And when we found out that there was actually traction to the claim, we immediately responded. Gieslin placed Silvera on paid administrative leave on June 8, 2012, pending the final outcome of the investigation. The Langstaff claim alleges Gieslin is responsible for preventing all sexual hostile workplace, and even under the circumstances that there are no female employees. Female employees of the district work in the main office, not the water yard. Langstaff claim alleges wrongful termination, discrimination, harassment based on disability and age, violation of due process for tenured employees, violation of rights under California labor law, and intention to inflict emotional distress. He's represented by David L. Hagan of Grover Beach. Langstaff is seeking lost, present and future wages, medical costs from the loss of insurance, general damages, attorney fees, and costs. We also immediately engaged our insurance agency, which we're supposed to do. We have a $5,000 deductible, and we're guaranteed coverage up to $5 million on these cases. And that protects me, protects the board, protects the employees that are here. I don't know any other way that we could have handled it without being any more expedition or any more care or concern for the district to prevent them from suffering any financial harm. This did happen on a previous watch, and it happened on my watch. I had no clue that this was going on, and I was completely caught. As a matter of fact, when we got the claim, I immediately read it to district counsel and Matt Guerrero because of his abilities as attorney. And when we first read it, we thought it was just saber rattling in the claim, because that's the hot ticket now. But then that morning, I sat two individuals down individually and got them to confirm, and that's when we sprung into action. I don't know how I could have done it any quicker. I can tell you that Mr. Silvera resigned, and the Langstaff case is going forward and it's being handled by the insurance company. We have not got the report back on the scans of the computers. Somebody went to the board of directors the board of supervisors, and demanded I be investigated. I don't know what else I could have done. I don't know what else we could have done to protect the district. The personnel committee representatives were notified. Legal counsel was notified. Law enforcement was notified. I don't know what else we could have done, but I guarantee you that it won't happen again on my watch, and I am constantly working a vigil to clean this up. We also, last Friday, had every OCSD employee attended a sexual harassment seminar, which was put on by San Luis Obispo County probation officer Gary Drellman. He presented a two-hour, 72-page slide sexual harassment deal. And the funny thing was that after the staff attended it, they came forward and wanted to know what it would take to file a harassment suit about certain individuals that come into the district and cause them grief, which we will have that discussion with legal counsel when we get back. So that's where we are with that. Water report went out as we talked.
Can I just add two things to your report on that?
Sure.
Is one, I want people to know that the investigator that was hired, he interviewed you the same as he would any of the board of the directors or any other staff.
Yes, everybody.
You too were investigated and interviewed.
That's accurate.
I think that needs to be put out there. Every HR document I've ever read, and I've gone back and read, did it by the book protocol, right? And in fact, we moved much faster than others were able. And also, too, is that this has been going on through six GMs. So it wasn't like this behavior started when you started, right? Before computers, they were using VHSs in here. You know, so this is systemic behavior throughout this system. And now it's ending. That's the difference, is that Oceano is notorious. Small cities, towns are notorious for this behavior, right? And now it's ending in Oceano. So I want to applaud you for weeding it out and eliminating that kind of behavior quickly. You know, I think that was I can't think of any other way that nobody could have moved faster. I mean, from the time the mail came in, the letter was read, the equipment was confiscated, you know, and the investigator was brought on, was faster than anybody could, you know, bat an eye at, you know. So when I heard who's, you know, investigating Mr. Geislin yesterday on TV, which was totally inappropriate that it was even being heard in that arena, right? Well, I want to say is that the investigator investigated you, you know, along with everybody else. So, you know, I was just disgusted.
All right. Back to the, I want to give you, these are bullets, and this is just some of the stuff that we've knocked out since we've, our last board meeting. So the water report's done. I handed out copies tonight. I promised that we would have ongoing water report of what our well is doing and what we're pumping. And the key thing I want to point out is that Director Lucy had some concerns about whether we were using groundwater or not. Well 8 is our groundwater pump, and you can see that we pumped almost 6 acre feet this past month, and then the total amount that we pumped is listed here as the total amount that we use is surface water, which is a combined Lopez and a state water for the month is, I got to find it here, 74 acre feet. But that includes what we've wheeled to Canyon Crest and then also wheeled to Roy Grandy, which we already been paid for, that also came in over budget. So this will come out as part of the Sunshine deal of what we're actually doing, and that will eliminate the questions that we have with respect to that.
Thank you.
When Mr. Silvera resigned, we went through and we found out that there were several compliance issues. Well, one, this is the time of year that you get a lot of your compliance issues addressed, but there were several compliance issues that were not being addressed. I was led to believe they were. I had confirmations that they were, but it turns out that the confirmations were not done properly. We immediately engaged District Engineer Doug Grosshart and Aaron Hughes and our new guy, Tony Marciano, and they have beat 90% of those compliance issues down, and we'll have the rest of those finished up. We distributed the copper testing. We have to do this copper testing every year, and we've notified residents that we need them to participate, and we've got that done, so we'll be winding that up. The over-the-road fees. When I was looking for revenue, one of the things I looked for was over-the-road fees, and so I contacted the county and tried to get it. I didn't get an answer. I engaged Supervisor Teixeira, and he had a meeting. Chief Joel Arnez and myself and Supervisor Teixeira and Mr. Buckshy of the county, and there we were told one thing, and on Tuesday the week before last, I got a notice that there was going to be a Parks Commission meeting and there would be a proposal put out to discuss handling the over-the-road fees being distributed through the Parks Commission. And I cried foul. Chief Aranas and I both went up and protested it. It looked like a couple of the commissioners got what we were saying, but we were speaking as public comment, and though I clearly identified I was with the OCSD, and I also had the support of AG and Grover Beach because we're working on it together, along with the chief, they passed it anyways, and now goes to the Board of Supervisors. But Chief Aranas and I have already met with Supervisor Hill, and we're going to meet with the other supervisors prior to this deal, and we are going to continue to fight it. The goal is to get money for the JPA so they can continue to service the beach with an upgraded vehicle and then to allow us to repair some of the infrastructure, because State Parks is one of our biggest customers and we spend a lot of money
taking care of the things that we take. The other thing I need to point out is that they haven't made any payments since 2008, and they've been holding back money, which they're entitled to do, for mitigation against the Air Pollution Control District Fugitive Dust Rule. The reason why they're doing it is that county owns 40% of that land, and so if the APCD were to, and I hate to say it, but prevail and start fining people, then the county would be part of that group, and so they need money to mitigate that. When we had the meeting with Mr. Buckshaw, he told us it was $200,000. When we had the presentation for the Parks Commission, the number turned out to be $400,000. And so we are working together. I had city managers meeting this morning, and it was brought to my attention that Grover Beach mayor and their city manager is also going to have a meeting with Supervisor Hill to try and firm up this. So we are working on it. Now, the beauty of this is you guys have given me more carte blanche to go after this stuff, where they have to get approval by their council to do it. So there's this lag. So where I lead off in agitation, they're right behind me. And we're going to continue to go after it. Whether we get it, I'm hoping the fire department gets theirs, and I have a lot of confidence. Whether we get the other stuff, it still needs to be seen, but I am fighting for that as well. We received a grand jury report, and what they did was they were assessing transparency of the community service district. The title was Managing Millions, Accessing Transparency of the Community Service District. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to read what it says about Oceano, because it's critical, and I will do a formal response. It says Oceano, annual budget $4,070,000, location Oceano, charter water, sewer, fire protection, street lighting, and other miscellaneous items. General manager Thomas Gieseland. They misspelled my name, but so does everybody else. They give our website, and it says agendas posted. So I will respond to that and take care of that. We will have the special meeting on the budget. I do have to make some changes based on things that have happened in the last 2 weeks, but what you will get on Friday will be the proposed budget that I'm going to request you to adopt. We've knocked out several accounting issues, and we put in some additional controls. I also alluded that we're prepping everything to get ready for the audits, and we're going to close. Our goal is to try and close 11-12 by the end of July, and I think we'll do it. One thing that popped out about it was in previous years, because we're a cash basis entity, nobody ever captured what we had due coming in or what expenses that were coming in. So on the close of business, we did capture our aging for both the AP and the AR. And that's going to eliminate a huge problem, because we'll be able to close the year significantly quicker, and we won't be having to make all these prior period adjustments that we've had to make for the last 3 years. So I'm really proud of that. I received the election analysis from County Council, and the election is taking up a lot of my time because we have won 4 members that are up, and I have to get all these resolutions in place, and there's a timeline that I'm functioning to, which on our next board meeting we're going to try and knock those off and get them in place. I have the forms out at the desk for anybody who wants them, to if they're considering running for any of the seats, and it's not just for my board members, if somebody's alleged, it's for the general public. We've had people come and apply, but what the county recorder's office and county clerk has requested that they immediately contact them, because they have a stair step that they have to walk everybody through as well. So, but those are out at the desk. We just completed a billing cycle, and we've discovered that we've had a few, a lot more hardships are starting to pop up, and I have been signing a lot more, approvals to allow them to break up their payment. A lot of it is legitimate, and then we have the few that continue to wait till the last minute and give you, you know, my dog ate my homework and that type of thing, but we're, the customer service is the priority, and we're literally bending over backwards. Where I'm not bending over backwards is when people come in and they lie and they say they're not getting their bills and all this other stuff, because that's that has proved to be not justifiable. We're wrapping up the JPA negotiations. I anticipate we're going to have one. The goal is to get that ratified by their ending board meeting, which I believe is July 27th?
Yes.
Yeah, July 27th. I'd also like to commend Director Hurdle, because she's now going to be the chairman of the JPA.
Ooh.
Ooh, right.
Go mama.
The other thing,
only woman, too.
The other thing is on the customer service side, I've had numerous people, because of with our staff member that whose husband was critically injured in the, Celia Ruiz, his husband was critically injured in that head-on collision. He's in Santa Monica. She's been practically living down there. We've been rotating the field guys for coverage, and I have had numerous people come in and comment that how well the customer service is and how well they feel greeted and how they're impressed there that the field guys understand the billing process, and to some extent, because Marie had toured the facilities, that the staff knows all the procedures that we have to follow. So, and that's an everyday occurrence. So we all should be proud of that. And then a question came up about the responding about the flood with the sanitation district. And if you remember when I first got here, because of the financial situation, not just of us, but of all our member agencies, I was one of the ones that drew the line and said we need to start sharing resources and working together on stuff. And we do now have our guys are trained so that if there is a sewer issue like that, they can be on the property. And we had that training where both the Sand District employees, Grover employees, AG employees can now be there, assist the customer, give them the numbers and stuff that they need, and we're having those packets drawn up. So they will be first responders to that. Okay, a mistake happened. We learned from it. We're going forward. The other thing is, and this is really key. On July 3rd, right, we're all prepping for 4th of July, and our lift station decides to not function. And we went into emergency response because we have a couple problems. One is if it doesn't work, then we have another problem with the sewage, things that we're doing. But I just kind of find it amazing that $100,000 is only going to be in the bank a very short period of time, because we've got to go get some things repaired and repaired in a hurry to get it upgraded.
Are you done, Tom? I'm sorry. I have a question about that.
Yeah, I'm done for right now.
So it's more than just a reset button, huh?
Yeah, it's more than just a reset button.
Yeah, thought so.
It's an inside joke. The are we going to be out at RFPs for any of the work? Do we have any idea how
I don't think I need to go out for RFP, because most of it's repairs.
Okay.
And, for example, we use what's called a bubbler sensor that is similar to the little pump on an aquarium. Mm-hmm. And depending on how that bubbler functions, that tells us how to what we need to do. Well, we've already put transducers in all our wells, so we know what the electrical composition is. And Arroyo Grande's already converted all theirs to transducers, and they're actually giving us parts so that we can go do that, and so then their technician will come in and put that in place. The majority is going to be just repair stuff. If it exceeds a thing, then I will come to you. Arroyo Grande doesn't do this for free. They bill us, but their pricing is more than fair. And I'm probably going to bring a certificate of appreciation that I'd like to go present to the AG Council meeting to talk about this.
Great.
But I need to say, I need to really say that the Sand District employees also called to check up on us. And so that thing that we put in place is working. And so when people were questioning John before, yeah, okay, it's there. But now we're all functioning on the same page. What happened to those people is bad. There could have been better follow-up and everything else. But we have listened, and we've taken steps to make it better. So that's what we've done since our last board meeting. And I want you to understand that this level of work was done with somebody on administrative leave, somebody in a hospital taking care of a very critically injured husband, and we're all functioning just a little bit frayed and a little bit tired and a little bit irritated, but we are going to make it happen. And it's from Carol Ann to Marie to Tony, Aaron, and Casey. And you guys have all dropped in during this whole time period, and you've seen it in action. And I think we are very, very close to becoming that model utility that I said we would try and be. So I'm open to questions if you have any
Thank
questions.
Thank you, Tom. I also want to say Shane lives here in Oceano, and I see him all the time. And when I see him next time, I'm going to thank him personally because I really appreciate his service. I know he watches out for us. He has told me many times how well things are going here. And in fact, I got a call from Jim Erb last night, unexpected, after business hours, and he told me how well things are going here and what a great job you're doing. I didn't realize it had been a year already.
Yeah, it's a year.
But thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Well, like, again, it's not me, it's staff. And I think you can ask them all. They're just really appreciative that they got where they're at. And they, too, are embarrassed by what happened. And the investigator did a very, very thorough analysis on everybody, you guys included.
Right. We all got interviewed.
Yeah. And
interrogated.
And he came back and verbally said, the crew that you have now, he said, I wish I could stay down here longer because you guys work so well as a team. And I reiterated the open door policy and said, if anybody has a complaint or whatever, district council relayed the same thing, that if there was a problem that they could go, if they didn't feel comfortable coming to me, that they needed to come to her. And that's what we're functioning, and that's how we're going to do it. So we're moving forward as quickly as we can.
And Tom, I just want to say too is that, you know, about a year and a half ago, I could not get through the grocery store without people complaining to me constantly about how the district is run. And now I can go into the grocery store, everybody is tickled pink about how things are running in Oceano. I have not gotten one complaint from a resident here. Not one. A couple of suggestions, but never criticisms. Everybody is. I think the town is really comfortable on the leadership.
Thank you very much.
And
I forgot
thanks
one.
For allowing me to go back to Vaughn's.
Thank you. I forgot one very important thing. So, as you know, we have a budget issue with the sanitation district on what we're going to charge them for mailing. And in the past, and this goes back to when a gentleman by the name of Rich Hill was the general manager here, and I don't know how far back that goes, but the reality of it is I have requested an agreement that shows what they should pay us, and one hasn't been produced. So what I've done,
Yeah, we attended RAC and discussions. I'm looking for my notes I had. They did discuss the various items concerning. Let me get my page back here. The process of development for the Proposition 84, Round 1 Integrated Water Management Implementation Grant and Plan B. There was monies to be allocated for NAPOMO, and because of the 218 proposition that didn't pass, they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with the funds that were allocated for NAPOMO if they don't figure out a way to get back into it. The ideas were to maybe extend the Los Osos Community Wastewater Project monies from the NAPOMO project. And there's also been some other suggestions that possibly they could also offer that once the requirements have been submitted for replacement to Shandon CSA 16 state water turnout and the Santa Margarita CSA 23 state water turnout as well. So it kind of depends upon right now whether or not NAPOMO is going to decide to try to get back involved with it and be able to utilize it partially. If not, if they have to pass on the whole thing, then there's some suggestion that it could go to some other areas. And, of course, they're suggesting also that it fund more for Los Osos.
Yes.
The other item was the agricultural cluster ordinance, which was discussed, and they had mostly they were talking about, you know, how the property would be divided down and how the water would be processed for what size parcels, that type of thing. They also did pick, let me find that page, I can't think of his name.
It's
Williams, Patrick Williams, to sit on the advisory committee for the agricultural at-large alternate member. And he was chosen for that position.
And he's from the New Pomo area, was that correct?
I think so.
I know that the Blair, yeah, Blair and Williams was from New Pomo,
right.
I think.
Williams should be.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure that's right.
Right.
I can't find his name on here, but it's, and it was through the this area's ag people, Tommy Iketa, and that selected this group. Tom Iketa, South County Growers, was Mr. Williams was recommended for approval. So that's where that ended up.
I think part of the problem too, well, on the ag cluster, is they're going to change it from, I think it's 3 acres. To two and a half acres that
yeah.
you can develop in your, but you can only do 4 lot line adjustments at a time. So if this affects you in any way, I suggest that anybody who's involved in agricultural land look at these policies and procedure changes. They're going before the board for adoption and see if they impact you. I thought it was actually a pretty important, and a lot of the policies and procedures have changed. You want to mention the minutes? Oceano got a little phrase in our minutes, in the minutes.
Oh. Go ahead. You got it open.
I guess they were tired of me throwing temper tantrums around saltwater intrusion. And so it's going to be removed from the master plan.
Right.
And the flood plan, I guess. And they're going to remove a couple other things, but they're definitely going to stop tying Oceano into saltwater intrusion. There's plenty of other people admit mm-hmm. that they have saltwater intrusion, you know, so they don't need to put us in there. And then, I don't know about you, Lori, but for me, and I don't know, maybe legal counsel can help with this, is that the chair of the Water Resource Advisory Committee for
yeah.
the county, which is RAC, right? He is also the board president for New Pomo Community Service District. And so, for example, when we were talking about the grant
yeah.
And that the 218 had failed, right? We probably would have recused ourselves from that topic and stepped away from the table because $2.2 million was on the agenda.
So it sounds like you might be asking more about like an incompatible office problem.
It's definitely a problem, you know. There's a conflict. It's just blatant. Particularly when you're the largest recipient of funds and you're advocating for your geographic area and you're chairing the body that's making those decisions, it's very problematic.
Yeah.
And I've brought it up and I've been shot down, you know, given
the
evil eye and all that stuff. But supposedly a portion of this money is going to go back out to bid. We'll see, right? It would be 2.3, but I think they're going to put some towards Shandon and those other areas. But one thing that is included in this application is flooding. Mm-hmm. And nobody's addressing flooding out of what was funded. Now, Oceano, that's outside our powers. But it's not outside the county's powers.
Right,
and we have a history of flooding. So they're giving Zone 11A $2.2 million loan for the waterway management project, which is anybody who's along the zone, all the way from rural AG all the way down, right? So that's where your 2-inch levee went up and, you know, and they shifted some branches around and processed a lot. So I don't even know how to go about getting our flooding issues in this an application in for it, because flooding is out of our jurisdiction. We have to live with it, but, you know, it's the county's jurisdiction to make sure that we don't flood. So this is state money.
It'd be nice to get some of it for down our way of the levee,
yeah,
because everything is going up further up, like up by Halcyon and stuff where it crosses over. They're cleaning areas out in there, but
we're and it's due here. July 31st.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why they didn't, like, take this money and eliminate the flooding problem that they have.
Why don't we look at that issue again at some point? Maybe I can help you out with it. And then if you draw low, it sounds like there's a fairly tight timeline for it, too.
Yeah. But see, the money came to the county in 07. Yeah, 07. So these requests were put in 07.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a long time. And then they put it out to RFP. And then, you know, they did their 218 thing. And that, whatever Plan B is, I think there's multiple Plan Bs. But
and I think that's tough to me.
Yeah, so. But we're on top of it.
Would it help if I asked Public Works to give a presentation on Zone 101A and where we've been? We haven't had a meeting in a while because of the summer, but it probably wouldn't be too bad if we got them to explain that.
Yeah, I think it would help. But then on the other hand, it's just regurgitated information. I've been going to the zone since it flooded. I went to the first meeting before they created the assessments of those properties. And 430 landowners, you know, were trying to fight it and spread it out so that those 400 didn't absorb the entire assessment for the flood. The count, everybody else voted against it, you know, and so they got stuck with it, the people who live in that area. But so I've been going a long time, and it's the same issues. They can't, you know, they're caught up in permit hell. Sorry to use that terminology, but that's what it is. The permits are sitting on file, sitting on file, sitting on file, never ready for when there's a flood, right? They, you know, they can't go past the 22nd Street Bridge because the Coastal Commission, because you got to put another permit in, right? Well, the beavers don't care, that there's 22nd Street Bridge there. You know, they're going to build all their dams all the way down to the damn beach. But they're restricted from going to where the mess is. You know, that they got to get another permit to sludge out the lagoon. That's not going to happen in any of our lifetimes. You know, so Zone 101A is kind of like a lot of really good people who don't have any power. They can't get the wheels to grind. They can't get them to move. You know, and those permits just sit there.
Karen had a question. Director White?
Yeah, I just wondered if that Zone 1 of flooding was Meadow Creek, not Roy Grundy Creek.
I understand that, and Meadow Creek is being addressed as well. It's just that the same 12 agencies are limiting us there as well.
Yeah. So, I don't know. You could come and have them present. I mean, it's a great group of folks. It really is. You know, it's just their hands are tied. And NIMS, you know, the National Marine Wildlife people. They're just running them in circles. Mm-hmm. So that's all our reports.
Director Hurdle.
Yes.
Can you speak into the mic?
Yes.
Tom said we'd be here till 11. I want you to make sure that doesn't happen.
Okay. I attended the Five Cities Fire Authority meeting, or JPA, on the 29th of June. We passed a resolution approving an agreement with a consultant to provide Proposition 218 special versus general benefits analysis and benefit assessment district formation services for the Five Cities Fire Authority. And this is being done in order to create a stable revenue source for us to meet the national standards for fire response. It was wonderful that we got that $1.8 million grant, but that's only for 2 years, and we want to reach and maintain the national standard. The financial impact of this resolution was $64,500, but it is being paid for by money that was saved from the 2011-2012 budget, which is great. We are, as Tom said, still in labor negotiations, and looks like that's going to be completed very soon. And let me back up, though. Okay, with the analysis, we're anticipating the evaluation to be take place between August and October, and November to January we'll have a community outreach, which would be talking to organizations and communities that will benefit from this assessment, and they expect everything to be rolled out by December and receiving the first funds by December, which would be wonderful. I did attend the golf drop that they had on the 16th at Grover Park. That was really interesting. I had no idea what a golf drop was.
You obviously didn't bring us any prizes.
No, I didn't. All I got there was a hot dog, and I had to pay for it. Yeah, I bought tickets, but it was really interesting. I think they sold, 5,000 golf balls, and the guys went up on the ladder, and they had, I think it was really actually just one hole in the ground, and they dropped all these balls at one time, and whatever ball dropped in the hole got the prize. I thought that was pretty interesting. I think that's about it. We did also have a presentation. We had a couple of badge pinnings. Well, actually, I think there were about
four.
Yeah, four badges, and that always excites me after having worn a badge for 25 years. You know, so that's kind of wiping away the tears. And other than that, it was a very good meeting. So.
It was nice. I was there for that as well. That was very, very nice. Obviously, there was not a sanitation district meeting last week because of the 4th of July holiday. There is one next week, 6 o'clock. And I have a depot at 5. I was hoping that Director Angelo could cover the sanitation district meeting next week.
You're going to love that. Okay.
Okay, great.
And that's
I appreciate
what date?
That's next Wednesday, 6 o'clock here at the OCSD.
I was thinking we're having one tomorrow.
Those are all of my reports. Let's move on to item 12, closed sessions. We don't have any closed session items tonight. Number 13, public comment. Kevin P. Rice.
Might I be allowed to comment again? I just wanted to address a couple of things I've heard tonight. First of all, to Director Lucy's comment about who comments should be addressed to. Just as an informational point, the Brown Act says the public shall be provided the opportunity to directly address the legislative body. So it's my opinion that comments should be directed to the board as a whole. And I'm not really sure it matters, because if I want to pick on one of you personally, I'm going to find a way to put your name into it.
That's true.
To Director Hurdle, in regards to comments going after reports, I wanted to make a clarification. Reports to me are like the general manager's report, where there's no board action that follows.
That's right.
And that's what I was saying.
Those items don't need public comment. Now, it's nice if those items are scheduled before the comment period, long as possible. We don't have to mandate that it gets thrown out, but if there's a mandate that it's on the website. I've got years and years of Air District meetings on my hard disk. All I ask is be careful with how tied up you get with the personal conflicts that are going on here. There's a case, March 2002, Norris versus Santa Cruz. A gentleman made a Nazi salute, not from up here, but from back there, and they threw him out for being disruptive. That's still in the courts 10 years later. And just don't tie your taxpayers into a personal dispute between somebody. If it's not a clear disruption of the meeting, I'm just telling you, just let it go, because it's not worth it. And you just have to be the bigger person. So thank you so much again. You guys have a great night.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Is there any other public comment?
No.
Ladies say no. All right.
No.
Wake her up.
L.A. Okay, board member discussion item number 14. Is there anything we haven't covered this evening that anybody would like to cover?
What?
Hearing nothing. Number 15, board member items for the next board meeting agenda that we haven't already discussed. I think we've given some direction, and Thomas had some ideas.
We'll have to put the bylaws back on.
Yeah, I've got to do that.
And the resolution, I think we took the resolution, but we didn't pass it yet. Is that correct? Yes. So we need to bring that back as well.
You know, I'd really like a nice light meeting, because we've gone through 3 months of very, very heavy meetings. So it is summertime. You guys haven't had a break. And right. I think we need a light meeting. So I'm going to tailor the agenda. We'll bring these back, but hopefully you've vetted it by then. But I think the goal is to get back to our 8:30 schedule.
Okay. Well, and we've actually, I would like to be out of here by 8:30. I was trying to be out of here by 8:30 as well evening. We've already had the public comment on these two items, on the bylaws and the resolution, so we can bring those back just for vote, I think.
I don't recommend that. I recommend at least the bylaws to
let public comment go forward again, since we are changing it. So we'll have to repost it. But
all right. Anything else? Britain Communications, Tom?
I reviewed all the written ones that I got in my review, so the grand jury was the big one. Mm-hmm. We'll get that taken care of. That's all I have.
I wanted to make sure that Kathy Young's correspondence got put into the minutes.
That was supposed to be on last meeting's minutes. We were going to redact her address and telephone number and then
include that. Okay, great.
Yes.
Okay. But we're going to approve those at the next meeting,
yes,
right?
For the last meeting, Carol Ann, we had discussed putting her letter, redacting her address, telephone number, and email address. And with that, do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I'll second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Good night. It's 10:25.